8:45 on the clock. Let's call to order the regular meeting of the Gage County Board of Supervisors here Wednesday, March. Is it the Ides of March? Is that right? Is that today?
March 1st.
March 1st?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, all right. I'm off.
Statehood Day.
Okay. All right. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall, attendance by observation. Setzer, Byers, Lytle, Bauman, Dorn, Hill, Juergens. Next on the agenda is a consent agenda, and that consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes held from the meeting February 19, 2014, approve all claims through March 5, 2014, in the amount of $855,729.39. Approve on place on file all correspondence received. Approve caretakers for Pioneer Cemeteries for Gage County for the 2014 season. Approve canceling check 14020045 to NACO in the amount of $240. And also check 13110290 to Nebraska Notary Association in the amount of $17.50. Approve specifications for quotes on a 2-year agreement for the lawn mowing and fertilization program for county facilities. Quotes to be received by March 26th. Approve utility permit 985 RDG Geoscience and Engineering to bore a flush grade monitoring well located in the northwest corner section of the northwest quarter of the southwest quarter of the north. All right, this sounds goofy, but I'm going to read it. Located in the northwest quarter of the southwest quarter of the northeast quarter of section 29, Township 3 North, Range 7 East, Rockford Township. Is that?
Got it.
It's Dr. Seuss I'm reading here. Sorry. Okay. Approve district court summary and forecast report for the month of February 2014. Those are the items 1 through 10. Need a motion to approve, disapprove, or consider something separate.
I would move to approve.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Yeah.
The claims, part of the reason that's so big this time is there was transfer into insurance.
Insurance fund.
From general fund and insurance fund of $500,000. And that's what made that so large this time for claims.
Is that the insurance sinking fund, or is this just for payments?
This is how we operate our insurance now.
Okay. All right.
Instead of the general fund.
Because we still have, don't we, in the reserve or a sinking fund, we had
$10
in.
Well, that's all in that same one now. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other discussion? I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Seeing none, vote 7-0. To approve. We'll jump right in. Well, we have comments from the public and requests for future agenda items, and if we don't have anything right away and someone wants to speak, we will go back. See a lot of folks out there, so as they come in, if they want to speak, we'll allow them. Committee reports, building and grounds, winter lights.
Well, we had our public meetings on Monday. Nobody showed up for our meeting, but I met with Tobias Templemeyer down at the city on the one-way streets on what they will be doing and if there is any possibility that they will take the one-way off of 7th Street that runs by our courthouse, and that's very unlikely. It's not one of their plans at all. So he's saying that our parking along east of the courthouse should stay the same, shouldn't be any problem. If they did change it to have it two-way from Lincoln Street on to Monroe, then we might have to take the corner there, that little corner area, next to our parking stalls, that might have to be modified. And he said that's where we could spend some money, $7,000 or $8,000. And I said that would be the city's expense, right? But he said no, that would be the county. So we'd have to negotiate that in the future. And basically, everything here in the courthouse is going well, and Dave and I have met, and still looking at the situation. He he's staying in touch with Gary and with their committee as far as the sheriff's offices are concerned and where we'll go with that down the line and in the future. So that's all that we have.
Anything for equalization? Finance and insurance?
We had a meeting yesterday with Amber and Lowell and Swarthout. Just to talk about and see how our county may be affected with Obamacare, which will be effect for us around September 1st or whatever. I think everybody should have got the sheet handout. There's just basically, I think, three things on there and basically some wordage that's...
They don't have it.
Oh, they don't have it?
Uh-uh.
Oh, okay. Minor changes to our plan for what we need to do to get it in compliance or whatever. There is, I guess, more looking forward with the out-of-pocket cost than that. We had some discussion on that, and generally the consensus was that we need to wait until in July sometime when our new rates will come out so that we can have a better understanding of how that will affect our premiums or how that will affect the individuals in the county and stuff. So, but we did have that discussion. And they'll be coming back sometime at one of the meetings here in July or August and visit with us, too, and update everybody on that and stuff. But might have another meeting before then. As far as finance go, we've talked about in the past a little bit. We've got a resolution on there about using the county's vehicle when they're traveling to meetings or whatever. And we visited some about that, and that we'll be bringing that back in the near future to maybe have a vote on by the board. Basically, it says in there that if you don't use the county's vehicle, we won't pay you if you drive your own. And we're trying to change some of that wording because that really hasn't been in effect. So working on that. So,
Myron, on the insurance part of it, I remember them saying as far as claims, the county's in a pretty good position right now so far, up to date. So. Real good position. So
they updated us. We're self-insured, and they updated us on the advantages, especially with Obamacare, that is for our county and the counties or the people that are doing that. We asked them what some of the increases they're seeing, and I think if I remember right, in the private sector, they've seen some that are having 50% premium insurance increases in premiums, 50% increase in. Because of all the things that are happening, you know, can't contribute to any one thing, generally the self-insured ones are looking at pretty minimal increase so far. That's the preliminary data and stuff. So, if we had a 50% increase here for the county, we'd be talking a lot to you guys trying to figure out what to do. So, anything else, John?
I don't think so.
Human resource and employee relations. We're going to talk. Do that later. Or do you want to do that now?
I did not see it on the agenda for the handbook. Did I miss it?
I thought we were going to just have that on there as a discussion. I thought we talked about that 2 weeks ago.
Human resources. Oh. Just to talk about it during that.
Okay.
I mean, we can do it. You can do it separately.
Oh, we got time now.
Okay. Our committee met. And there were just a couple of things that we discussed that hadn't previously been discussed and over and over and over again. One of the things was snow days. Currently, if the courthouse is closed, we are not paying for snow days. And I know this was discussed a couple of years ago. And I believe that is fair. That is common practice among other employers within the county that, if you close for a snow day, they are not reporting to work. They can use a vacation day or other pay that they have if they want to be paid for it. Otherwise, they can take it as an unpaid day. Some people felt that if it's closed, the employee should be paid for it. And I guess I'm looking for input from the full board on that one. Currently, you do not get paid if the courthouse is closed. If we do pay employees for a closed day, it's like $10,000 for a day to pay everybody.
Approximately.
And then you run into the fact of the highway department, if it's that bad of a snow day, they are working anyway, and then you run into having to pay them double or whatever the practice is there. So they would be considered on call. But currently we're not paying them for a closed snow day.
My position with regard to snow days is we're fairly liberal with the vacation days and that's accumulated as far as employees go. And as I talked with, and in the past, this year, we didn't have really a conversation, but last year with the sheriff and the emergency manager and Galen, my main concern is, since this is a public space, can Davey keep up to keep the walk safe for people to get in and out of here? If it becomes a hazard for the public to get in and out of here, if it's ice, if it's snow, and Dave can't keep up on that, why in the world would we want people to come here? If we keep it open, the employee can decide. And I think, you know, we keep this place open quite a little bit. And the highway department is different because they're out there clearing the roads in the rural areas. So they're going to operate. They don't really get a snow day. But I think that's kind of my position I've always taken is I'm not going to advocate closing anything unless Davey gives me the feedback. And then we just don't want the public to come because there's fall hazards, it's risks, and it's just not safe. And if Dave can't keep up on it, that's kind of been my position. It's a low volume issue. It just doesn't happen that much. And we give pretty good benefits if you go through that package.
And the employee always has the option of saying, I feel it's too dangerous for me to come in, and so I'm not coming to work today.
I agree.
And also an elected official has the option of closing their office, which I know is kind of an awkward situation if one office closes and the other one doesn't. But I believe it should be left as an unpaid day unless other people feel it should be changed.
Any idea how often we've done it? I mean, just maybe once a year
not very often, maybe once or twice. I think.
Once or twice. Yeah.
Last year, I think we had two, maybe 3 days, and I think once we tried to be preemptive, and
then it didn't happen.
That happens, you know.
Yeah.
But if you don't do it, then you're criticized for why didn't you prepare? So, I don't know.
The other thing was just brought up, and I think it's a really good idea, but I don't think it needs. I think it's something that should be put in as an amendment, because I think there's a lot of research that has to go into it, is being able to give away your sick time. If somebody has a really a long-term illness or something, and I have accumulated sick time, can I give it to somebody else? Currently, there's no plan in place for that. I think it's a really good thing to do. But I don't want the whole handbook to be held up to get that plan in place. So I think that's something that can be added at a future time. Don checked on the wording on the Christmas Eve day. It is listed in here as not a paid holiday. And then we discussed if there was if we had to say the highway department had to come back in and work, would they be getting considered holiday pay since it's listed as a holiday? Is there any liability, even though it's listed as a non-paid holiday? And she checked with Pam, and we're fine there. And those were the only things I had marked.
Well, the public base should know Pam Bourne, who is our attorney. So,
for human resources type things. Those are the only things I had marked. Danny or John, did you have anything else, or did anybody else have any?
No.
Okay. Can everybody, does everybody have recent copies of the handbook?
Okay, probably what I'll do is I'll just print.
I guess I would agree on that, you know, that sick time issue needs further discussion and probably should be a separate process.
Right. And approving this handbook does not mean that everything is written in stone forever, because we can make changes or amendments to the handbook, such as a sick time exchange. But it's a start. You obviously, well, I don't have my original handbook right here that I got when I came on the board 4 years ago. It's about half this size, I think. You know, by trying to cover all of the bases for every situation, for every person that anything might ever come up and be a question, and cover you legally and morally and ethically, it's impossible to do, because there will always be some situation that comes up that you're like, it's not 100% clear in the handbook. But Don and the elected officials and our Pam Bourne, our attorney, everybody has worked really hard to clarify everything that they think will possibly come, that they've encountered in the past. So I think this is a really good starting point, and hopefully close to a finishing point. I would like to see if everybody can have in their packets for Monday a copy of it. We can do another discussion. Do you think we can be ready to approve it next in 2 weeks, if or to approve or disapprove or change?
I would say let's move forward.
Make a new copy for everybody, and I'll put one in your tray so everybody has the latest.
Okay.
Sure. Has the latest copy.
Okay.
I'm going to kill some more trees.
Yeah.
I know my stack of just handbooks is like this.
I'm just going to interrupt you here, and we have a time to advance our Veteran Honors Program, and I'd like to have Veteran Service Officer Phil Dibbrenner come forward and present our Veteran of Honor for this month, please.
Hi, at this time it's my pleasure to introduce the veteran who was selected for the Veterans Honor Program this month, and that is Marvin Pabin. Marvin joined the United States Navy on July 23rd, 1942, and served in the Pacific Theater of Operations until January 26, 1946. He received the American Medal, American Area Medal, the World War II Victory Medal, Asiatic Pacific Medal, Philippine Liberation Medal, and the Good Conduct Medal. He was also assigned to the Naval Advanced Base Unit Number 13. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Marvin Pabin. I don't know about that Good Conduct Medal. Are you sure about that?
You have the floor, sir, if you'd like to speak with us.
Well, where do I start? I will say I was glad to fight for our country, and I would do it again if I had to, but I hope we never have to. And I thank you for the honor you gave me today. Thank you.
We've been doing this just about a year now, and we've had the absolute honor and to see some of these veterans who've come forward, and I would say that 100% of them have just been absolutely soft-spoken, wonderful, kind human beings, and we see that the family that shows up here and appreciates them, and it may be a small thing, and we certainly don't give you enough time. I understand that, but we do appreciate you coming here, and we honor you today, and thank you for the service to your country, and always thank you to the service to your community when you came back.
Marvin, on behalf of the county, I'd like to present this to you in our appreciation. Thank you very much.
If anyone would like to speak on Mr. Pavin's behalf, you're more than welcome to. If anything you'd like to share, that's absolutely fine. And if not, thank you for all your attendance. Appreciate the being here for his honor. Thank you.
I think my entire neighborhood is here. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know.
I'm so glad we do this.
Yeah. You can even see some.
Like I said, yeah. My only regret was it wasn't my idea.
It's fantastic. It is. It's fantastic.
And I love it when the Kensington, when it's a Kensington resident, because
yeah.
They bring
yeah.
The remarkable all the nice. Different areas. Theaters of war, these guys.
They do.
Gage County.
They do.
They do this. Across the world.
My father-in-law is making their life miserable right now.
Uh-oh. Well, my father-in-law was there for a while before he passed away, and they were just wonderful. Just wonderful.
He has the flu, and he won't stay in his room.
Yeah.
So somebody has to stay there with him to
keep him. Oh, that's what I need is when the church light. Like Carol's got it, because I'm getting to that point. I'm a slow-moving vehicle.
On the back.
I just was talking to Don here, and I think that as you sit here and you look at the folks that come and appreciate this and appreciate their family member and things, if anyone has any additional ideas to maybe make to expand this a little bit, obviously I don't want to take away from the business at hand here, but again, it is something that there's something additional. If anybody has any ideas,
Some of the family does a real good job about telling what they did in the theater that they served. And not to be critical here, but that's really interesting for me. I didn't grow up in this community, so I didn't have that opportunity. So, like Junior and some of them told where they went and what they did. And I realize some of them don't like to talk about that.
That's right.
They're very humble people.
Yeah. They're just starting to talk about it. It's amazing.
We've had, again, I think this is the 13th one we've done, and some of the gentlemen have actually passed away since they've come here, so I'm sensitive to that. But if there's any additional ideas, we can take a little more time.
Glad to do it all.
Okay. We got another timed event in 7 minutes, so whoever's going through their committee report, I'll interrupt you at that point, too. So, Kathy, anything additional? We'll look in 2 weeks. We'll get a copy of the updated handbook. Everybody go through that. Call Kathy with anything you got. Give her some feedback, and we'll take action in 2 weeks.
Call or email. Does anybody have any other comments or concerns or anything at this point in time?
Do you have a copy of that call-out policy for the highway department that needs to be in there? Or there needs to be something in there to reference it?
Right.
Okay.
Do I have a...
I'm going to give you one as I'm going through my... pass that down that way. Just we need to have a reference in there to that.
Okay.
Because they operate a little different.
You plan on voting on it in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, unless someone's absolutely not comfortable with that, but we probably need to kind of get down that road with that. All right.
Can you think of anything else, Don, that we discussed?
Yeah, I might cut you off a little bit because I know we're gonna, a lot of that's going to be communication
what
type stuff.
Law enforcement, emergency management. Obviously, two items are going to be coming up in agenda, one being the resignation of Mark Mainz. And then also the discussion on the county communications. We're going to hit both of those here pretty later, so I don't think there's any reason to hash it over right now and then turn around and do it all over again. So I guess the only other item we really discussed at length the other morning, which probably should touch on here, is we did start looking at the layout of the jail facility and whether or not there's a chance that we can move some things around there to accommodate the ADA requirements and look at future needs. And I think at this point, not not a move by the county as a whole, but I think I'll start doing some legwork on whether or not there's some options, get some more information to bring to everybody to discuss at the next committee meeting. But I think it is something we do need to continue to look at and make sure that we're on top of, because in the future we are going to have needs and issues over there, and we continue to expend good county dollars over there. And at some point we gotta ask ourselves, are we spending more than we're getting our value out of? So, I guess at this point I'd open it up to you guys for any other discussion, but I am going to start doing a little bit more legwork to bring to everybody.
And something I might just throw out here, because we will have an option as we in the future. You know, we had the bond issue and the public did not want to build a new jail. But we do have, I think Lancaster County faced this situation also, and there are statutes which would allow us as a county board to move forward to do a new facility without having that vote. And I want to take care of our taxpayers. I think it's really, really important. But many times, unfortunately, as much as we try to explain, they just don't understand the hundreds of thousands of dollars we're pouring into this old building that's their money, too. And is this safe? Is this what we need to do for the future? And sooner or later, we've got to make some tough decisions as a board and say, hey, this is our obligation to keep the people of Gage County safe and to have the best department. So just want to throw that out there, because we do have some options and we can look at some things other than what we've done in the past.
Well, Gary, I think I brought up at committee meetings and other times too the amount of money that we're spending on housing outside inmates or whatever and stuff. You know, last year we spent $85,000. This year we are already above that. I keep commenting the fact that I go on the website and keep looking at just to see how many we're housing basically outside. This morning we had 25 or 26 here. We had 7 or 8 outside the county. So our capacity is basically at 30. So that means that due to the population, we're increasingly housing more inmates in other facilities just because of the physical size of our jail. And that cost is hard. In budget talks with Gus, that cost is very hard to get a good handle on, because we don't know. Next year, the trend could reverse itself. We could be down below and you don't house very many prisoners. The disturbing part I see about it since I've been on here, it's escalated. It hasn't just gone up. It's escalated up. So,
and is part of your legwork, Gary, going to be a summary of what we spent on the jail in the past few years and maybe a summary of what we're spending on outside prisoners to kind of, you know, look at the overall balance of things? And
yeah, we can sure do that, John. I guess what I was looking at was just structural issues, mm-hmm. You know, what we can structurally do. But, yeah, I mean, that needs to be part of the discussion, because that is part of it.
And I think that'd help people kind of understand the issues of what direction is the right direction to go with.
Yeah, we can do that, no problem.
I would just like to comment on Denny's comment. There are legally some ways that we can circumvent the voter on this, but I don't think that that's our place. I think the voters have said at this time, until there's new information or new circumstances, they do not want to build a new jail. And just because we can go around their vote, I don't believe that's our place. Just as we were discussing earlier this morning, there would have been ways of financing the roads without a bond issue. We asked the voters, and they said yes. On the jail, we asked the voters, and they said no. And I think we have to go with what the voters say. Now, that doesn't mean things don't change and that we can't ask them again, but otherwise, I don't think it is our place to go around what they voted on.
And I normally would say exactly the same thing, and I would continue to say that. But there are times we have to make tough decisions, and I think we should consider that in the future.
And it may be a situation where at no cost, we could ask you know, take some of the volume numbers that we have, and they've done that study, and I pulled it out and read it again the other day, so we can kind of see what our study numbers are about the population. Maybe it's a situation where we ask not a law enforcement center, but a detention facility, just a detention facility. Maybe ask some architects, what do you have? Are there some boilerplate things? And I'm not saying going by on the cheap, but maybe what would a detention facility look like to house 40 people? And that would probably take care of our volume 95% of the time or something. And just, is there something out there? We're not going to, you know, I'm not suggesting we get a committee together. I'm not suggesting we spend money on a new jail. That is very clear. But maybe there's some merit in through law enforcement and building and grounds saying, what's out there? Is there, you know, I've heard there's these modular, they can put these jails together. There's all kinds of different. And after the bond issue failed, there was a lot of people said, well, that didn't go. Here's another idea. So maybe at no cost, we can just get ideas. And so when people ask us, we can say, well, yeah, no one's proposing spending $50 million on this great lavish thing, but there is a deficit over here. We need to address it. And maybe here's an idea. Maybe over time, people kind of warm up to the idea of, oh, okay, I see what you're asking. But it's not going to be a dead conversation, and we would be irresponsible if we tried to make it a dead conversation. But how that proceeds forward is very sensitive, because it's just very sensitive.
Well, it's real hard to say to the taxpayers, you know, we aren't going to listen to you. We know better, and we're going to go forward. But we need to tell the story of what it's costing us. And, I mean, it's costing us a lot of money, and that means the taxpayers every day that they just aren't totally aware of. And they need to understand how much it's costing them to do this.
I was just impressed there in Saline County when we went and looked at that dormitory, and I admit a level of naivety with jail construction. I get it. But there's this huge dorm, five times the size of this room, that you could put 35 people in. And I know there has to be different areas for different people, but I thought, how much can it cost to build something like that? I mean, realistically, you start to become maybe a little bit too practical, but you look at that. How expensive can that be for a detention facility? You know, I mean, I was impressed with that space. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm looking at is I'm looking at doing some legwork to try and start putting some things in place. And like I said, not pushing the county towards anything. We're not making any decisions. It's just get the options on the table so that they're there. That way in the future when they're needed, they'll be there. So,
okay. I've got a timed event. I need a motion to close all bids for spring rock and gravel bids. Close accepting all bids, I guess.
I make a motion to close all rock and gravel bids.
We're 2 minutes late at 9:17, but everything came in ahead of time. Got a motion by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote 7-0. And none of them are filled with gravel, so I think they're all legit.
Don't have samples.
Not bad.
Chuck it full.
This particular bid is from Western Sand and Gravel out of Ashland, Nebraska. Okay, pit price per ton is $10.25 out of Western Sand and Gravel.
Where is that? Where's that located, that pit?
It says Ashland, Nebraska, Matt.
Ashland.
It's the mailing address, anyway.
Not too far from Ashland. Several people have talked about this company here. Maybe Galen knows more, but you made the comment about after he's pumped so much out or something, there's part of that area, then he refurbishes and... new houses or something. Houses are being built on some of that or something, or somebody made the comment. Maybe Mark Minnelli did or somebody. Mark Minnelli did, yeah.
At the township meeting.
Yeah, at the township meeting he did, yeah.
And there are some hauling costs, just basically to five townships. They all vary. The northern townships, they've got some hauling costs included in eight northern townships. So no bid on the rest of them then.
So they only bid five townships?
They bid rock and gravel for all of Gage, rock for all of okay. Gage County, but delivery cost just for the eight northern townships, for them to haul it. We could go up there with a separate hauler and go pick it up for $10.25 per ton.
But it's gravel.
I meant gravel. Yeah, yes, gravel.
Western sand and gravel.
This is consolidated sand and gravel, Jefferson County, $9.60 per ton. There's hauling cost. Every township's different, so I won't go into that. We'll give these to Galen. He can review these later. But the main thing is the per ton cost on the gravel. Bid from Rock On. This is trucking only from the Alexander Pit. Once again, this is just the trucking part of it. Varies, like always. On this particular one, the low, briefly, the low is $4.75 per ton for hauling, all the way up to $10.37 per ton for hauling.
But that's just from the one pit.
This is just trucking only from Consolidated Alexander Pit. That's just from one pit, yes. Gaina Trucking and Excavating Incorporated. Pit price for gravel, $10.20 per ton. Hauling cost vary throughout the townships. Once again, $16 per ton all the way up to $21.
That would include the gravel, probably, at that price.
Total cost per ton, yes.
Yeah. Gravel and hauling.
Yep. That the pit price, I guess, you want to look at is the $10.20 on that one.
Okay, there's your rock.
This is rock?
Uh-huh. Say rock.
Yeah, that's the gravel part of it.
How many bids did we get them for gravel?
I don't know if Gaina Trucking, that pit price they have on there, they don't have a pit.
Not that I know of.
No,
that's so. Hauling from the Alexander Pit.
Hauling from the Alexander Pit. Yeah. So we would just basically have two. Yeah, the Alexander Pit and then Ashland.
Okay, on the rock bids, I'll just give a common rock bid everybody has, either 3/4 inch and a half. In this case, Beatrice Concrete, $13.45 per ton. Once again, rock bids on the trucking only from Dubois Pit. This is for rock. The rocking, this is just delivery costs now, once again. They range from there anywhere from $6.50 up to $13.59 per ton for delivery.
It's more to haul it than it does to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh.
This bid is from Kerford Limestone Company in Cass County. The three-quarter and inch-and-a-half rock are both at $15 per ton. Materials only on that one. Last one, I believe, is a total delivered cost for rock. Once again, ranges anywhere from for rock now, 1986 all the way to 2366 per ton. The cost on the rock is $13.65 per ton. The first I give you was delivered price. So basically on that rock, you're looking at $13.65 per ton.
Who is that from?
Gaina Trucking and Excavating. I think they're out of Martell. But, yeah.
And the rock is coming from?
I don't know. I don't see that.
It didn't say where it comes from either, so I don't
know.
Yeah,
I don't see that.
I mean, his price is based on that price for the rock, so you'd have to take off the rock and you could find out his trucking price.
Right.
But that's, yeah.
That'll be,
they'll have to.
They'll have their chart like we had last year. Mm. It doesn't really say. There's it's blank.
Yeah, right. Well, it's good.
Last year, I think, low bid on the sand, anyway, was $9.20 per ton. So I don't know what the increases are, but I'm sure there's some increase there.
Consolidated was $9.60 this year, so that'd been
right.
40 cent a ton increase, yeah.
Yep. As we have in the past, Matt, we'll refer these to the highway department. They'll will accept all bids. They'll figure out the low bid in each category and mark them that way, and we'll go from there. There's too much volume in there, I think, for a decision to be made today. I think it's going to take some time for the highway department to go through this. So I would say we would, in 2 weeks.
So your motion is to refer to the highway
yes.
department. Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Second by Lytle. Vote. 7-0. I got to be quick.
I know. I was missing my button here.
Right, refer to the highway department. We'll come back in a couple weeks, and if there's anything that doesn't look right in there, again, let us know, but probably be kind of the standard. So how many, just for a discussion, we've got 2 minutes before we have time to advance the public hearing, but Galen, how many rock and gravel bids did we have last year? Let's talk gravel, because we've kicked that thing around. We know that's going to be an issue. Could we just talk briefly, just for a couple minutes, then I'll interrupt you, but how many gravel suppliers we have last year to choose from or an opportunity to get product from?
Well, I believe we had two from Consolidated, the Powell Pit, and then also the Alexandria Pit, the Powell Pit being bank run gravel. And then we had one from Tease Pit, I call it Tease Pit, on his gravel, which we didn't get a bid on his pit this year.
That's that A sand and gravel.
And
as we spoke about in past meetings, that pit, I believe, has kind of run its course. The producer, the operator, the owner-operator of that pit did have discussions with me saying that he probably wasn't going to bid on these gravel bids this time because he wasn't certain he could produce enough gravel for what was needed. So he wasn't going to bid on until he knew for sure. He said he could. He's trying to find different locations, but it's tough to find as we've figured out, I guess. So
just, you know, I know we're looking at increased trucking costs and things like that, so the costs are going to continue to go up in supply and demand. And
that is one thing for sure. I mean, our cost. I mean, we the way it's done right now, the county guarantees the township so many miles of gravel every year, spring and fall. As I stated in the past, I don't think the fall allocations were, I think there was 10 out of the 24 finished last fall. So we have to start up this spring and try to finish those up and then go along with our spring allocation. We've been fairly lucky. Roads have been decent this winter. Not a lot of complaints, not a lot of problems out there. But one of these years, it's going to be an issue again. There's no doubt about it. So
It's 9:30. I need a motion to go into a public hearing to hear support or opposition from the public on special use permit 9014-1 for a temporary asphalt plant located in the west half of southwest quarter of section 15 Sicily Township. Need a motion to go into a public hearing.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Discussion. 7-0, we're in a public hearing. Anyone who wants to speak for or against the asphalt plant, we have a sign-in. We'll start with Lisa. She's a chairman of our planning and zoning. To give her recommendation. Lisa Wiegand.
Good morning. We have passed a little bit of information yet this morning from constructors that they provided us. Thank you. What you're receiving now is documents that were not in your packet.
Just because I see you here.
Those documents were not in your packet. And so they've handed those off to us this morning. And Chris Woodward, who is the project manager for constructors, will be chatting with that about those documents that you're seeing. He's addressing these documents, which were the question that we had was if there was any damage to county roads, how would they be addressed as they're going on to the sites and so forth and repairing the roads. So take a look at that, and then we'll have him answer some questions as you go along. But just to familiarize yourselves, most of you know with Roads and Bridge where the plant would be. It is actually directly just south off of Highway 77 on the southeast corner of Nebraska 112 and then the PWF. So the plant is located in an A2 district. So it's an allowable use, but they still have to go through that special use permit process. There were 40 landowners that were notified twice. Our hearing was on February 14th, and then we again notified them for the hearing today. So Chris Woodward is the project manager, and he presented the project to us, and he's here today to answer those questions. In your packet of information that you had gotten to begin with, it shows an overview. And just note where the driveway was located. The driveway itself is going to serve as an entrance, as an exit, and that goes right onto the State Highway 112. So our questions for Chris at that time were, as they're out delivering asphalt and product to different projects that we've asked them in Gage County to do, how that will affect any damage, and that's what this new packet of information will cause. So Chris also addressed the safety issues, you know, how they utilize safety and also the amount of time that they see needed for the temporary asphalt plant. So in June of 2010, we granted a permit of the same kind to constructors. To our knowledge at the time we had our permit, there was never any problems or concerns at all that we addressed at our hearing. So we acknowledge, we know that the need is necessary and that site seems to be the best suited for the project areas. So there was no one at our hearing out of those letters, 40 letters that we sent out, that they weren't there. There's no objections to the project at all. So our vote was 6 yes and we had 1 absent. So we are recommending approval. So questions?
Lisa.
Okay. You betcha.
Anybody else? Gentleman from Constructors, would you like to
Yeah, I think questions for Road.
That's a fairly important direction we're going to go.
Like she said, I mean, she kind of mostly went over the thing. My name is Chris Woodward. Apologize about my voice a little bit, but I am project manager for Constructors. We're here to apply for a conditional use permit for a proposed site out there south of Beatrice, primarily for a majority work for Gage County that we have to complete here in 2014. It's a 12-month permit, a 12-month lease that we have out there with Gerald Creven. We have a lease agreement with him, and everything is sufficient pending approval from the board today. So if there's any other questions, I'm surely happy to answer.
Terry, yes, sir.
Yeah, this plant will service then Highway 77 project as well as PWF West and Wymore Liberty Road, the overlays there. And I think I spoke to you earlier. You made the comment. You're not certain if that will service the Adams-Philly road yet. You haven't decided
that'll,
yet.
That'll kind of be a judgment call when we get to that point. For us, we have a permit plant up in Lincoln, and we're pretty much right at a wash miles-wise from hauling stuff out down there to up in Lincoln. So it'll kind of depend on what we're using the plant for in Lincoln at that point in time when we get to that project. If we're using it and the output is there, we'll probably bring stuff down that way. Like I said, that'll kind of be a judgment call. Mm-hmm. And the thing I guess that's important for you guys there, I mean, we'll be getting straight on the highway driving up and coming over on Pickerel Blacktop, so we won't be getting on anything different as far as county roads-wise are concerned, whether we're pulling it out of Lincoln or whether we're coming from down here south. So,
But if you brought it out of Lincoln, wouldn't you stay off the Pickerel Road? I mean, the Pickerel Road, kind of, it's a pretty long stretch there, and
And it potentially could be. I think when we were looking at it last, and I could be mistaken, but I think there's some road or some bridges coming from the other way that aren't good for the tons that we're going to be bringing across them. I think Pickerel Blacktop was a good one for us because of the bridges that were on it, if I remember right. I could be mistaken on that, but last time I looked at it, I think that was how that worked. So,
but if you brought it over on 41, wouldn't you be to the Philly Adams Road without any bridge issues?
We should be. I mean, we're going to be coming through town that way, and that's sometimes something we like to avoid just for, I mean, then we all of a sudden are getting involved with Adams, and, I mean, any kind of permanent damage we can cause for there, I mean, that's just stuff we deal with a lot. So, I mean, it's Pickerel or it's Adams. It's kind of six of one, half does the other, I think.
Galen, any questions, any concerns?
Not this time, just
Well, and that's, I mean, that's what's kind of in that packet. What I gave there was the haul roads for the Philly Adams is the only one that maybe is in question, and that I just drew coming out of our south plant down here.
And those roads being used would be that PWF from the plant, PWF,
correct,
what I call west, and then south of Wymore, a mile or two.
Yeah,
I think
and it's on there, and I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, exactly, just a half mile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Roger, anything additional we might need?
No, as I look through it, plus, you know, the best indicator of conduct is history. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a fact.
Yeah. When are you starting on this down there then, as soon as you can, or?
We will probably get stuff down. I mean, once we get approval today, we'll work things out with Gerald. We'll probably start clearing the site and moving in stockpiles. I mean, our plant's still down by Syracuse, so we'll probably get things mobilized there eventually. We've got a lot of work on 77 to do patching-wise with just concrete and that kind of thing. Casper's here in town's going to be working on that, hopefully, when the weather clears. We were hoping for not snow today, but we'll get there. So there's some work with that first, and then once we get that patching work kind of completed, we'll start hauling asphalt there. So,
Matt?
Yes, sir.
One more question, and you might not be able to answer this, but how many tons of product will come into this plant? Do you have any idea what it's going to take? And if you don't know, that's fine. It's just something that I was curious about.
I mean, I think at this point, and that's pulling some numbers out of what is coming out of Syracuse yet this year. I know, I mean, Gage County, I think there was somewhere around 60,000 tons. Gage are on 77, And that one's a rough number for me, too. I feel like that was around 40,000 tons.
Okay.
So on those jobs, I mean, we're talking about 100,000 tons easy.
That's enough. Okay.
And then, I mean, I've already been in talks with several people around the community that we're going to be doing some smaller jobs for and that kind of stuff. And that stuff does tend to add up, too. So.
All right.
All right. Any more questions? Thank you. Anybody else out there? Gus? Klaus? Need a motion to close the public hearing at 9:40.
So move.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Hill. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Next, the motion to approve or disapprove resolution
14-06
on special use permit number 2014-1 for a temporary asphalt plant located in the west half southwest quarter of Section 15 Sicily Township. Need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution.
I make a motion to approve.
Moved by Terry. Sorry.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Any more discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Let's go through here just because I've got Bev sitting back there. We're going to jump the agenda here real quick, and then we're going to talk communications, and that's going to take quite a bit of time. So we'll get which one is that? Where are we at? Well, approve or disapprove recommendation on a special designated liquor license for Bev Acton Classic Catering, Inc. on May 2nd, 2014 at the Homestead National Monument Visitor Center. Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
Move to approve.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Terry. Discussion. Gus? Got a letter from Gus here. He does, it says they do not oppose any additional thing we should be aware
of. That's correct. I don't oppose it. I talked to Bev, and they did this last year, and absolutely no problem. So there's no issues from my side whatsoever.
Anyone wish to speak with Bev, Ms. Acton? Desire to do so? Do you have anything you'd like to share with us? Bev Acton.
It's the same permit that I requested last year. It's put on by the Friends of the Homestead, and it's a reception for their donors that give money to fund different things at the homestead. It lasts about 2 hours. It's a very low-key event. It's inside of the building. We don't go outside with it. And one of the things Gus asked me was the average age of the people is 50-plus that are at this reception. So it's just a thank-you type thing. And last year they had a bluegrass band there on the lower mezzanine. It was just a nice thank-you thing for the donors.
Have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I just have to make my normal. I don't believe that alcohol is necessary on public grounds, and I think that there's other ways of celebrating and thanking people without including alcohol. And not, you know, there's plenty of other places that you can go have a drink. And so I'm going to vote against it.
Any other comments, discussion? We have a motion to second. Vote. 6-4. 1 against. Kathy's against. Everybody else is for. Motion passes. All right. Kind of going through my agenda here. Should we talk communications, or should we give Mark his plaque since he's got a lot of folks here? Let's do his appreciation. What's that? No, we're just gonna let's see, where's that? The plaque's up here, but
go get the goat.
That's better than a plaque, isn't it?
They're real.
They're not black. They're not dead.
This is obviously a presentation to Mark Mines for his years of service. 13?
Yeah.
That's 13 roses, not a dozen.
Yes.
So you got one for each year. So.
I'm with that. But again, obviously Mark plays a, has been an integral part in our community for quite a while with regard to emergency management, communications, which we're going to beat that horse today a little.
Yeah.
But I want to appreciate your service, Mark.
Thank you
very much. And you're going to be around for at least another month, so.
Yeah.
It's not done today.
No. Nope.
And I just wanted to do this since you had plenty of folks here. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt, I'd just like to add that I've worked with Mark since I've been on the board. I've been on Emergency Management Committee and spent a lot of time discussing different things with Mark, and I appreciate his professionalism and always giving 100% effort when doing the work and actually going above and beyond and sometimes taking on things he probably shouldn't because he didn't have time. But Mark's got a big heart, and he's done a lot for the county, and I don't think everybody's going to realize just how much until all of a sudden he's not here. So really appreciate it, Mark. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, is everybody comfortable? Let's talk communications. This is going to take a while, but this is very important. We got a lot of stuff we got to discuss about this. We need to start to move forward. We have folks here from the city as well that provide input. So just as a point of process, as you come forward to speak, and we've got two mics, just identify yourself for the record, and we'll kind of move forward.
Okay. As you know, we've been talking for quite some time. I think we look back and some of the first conversations we had with the board on our communications issues was back in August. So for about 6 months, we've been really working on this system. We've added parts to the system. We've repaired parts of the system. We've moved parts of the system over the last 6 months. And had different vendors look at what's the system, the parts that they could look at, because we do have some parts that are only one vendor is able to take a look at that part of the system and work on that system because of a contract. So we looked at different systems again. We started looking at the statewide radio system right away. We went away from it for a while. We come back to it, went away, come back. And I think our final decision here, as we look forward to the future, and kind of, I guess, what we feel is the best deal, what will best serve us in the county and in Gage County, is the statewide radio system. There's lots of things on the statewide radio system that's going to be to our advantage that we don't have now. One of them things that we really looked at was redundancy on the system. We don't have a redundant system now, we do have some backup systems that we can use, but the statewide system is a redundant system. The system will be on battery, on a generator power, our voting system currently now. If we don't have power at those seven sites that we have the voting system now, there is no voting system. It doesn't operate. The statewide radio system is on a generator system. All the sites are, so we would have a backup power system. Like I said, for the last 6 months, I've really done a lot to this. I didn't attend with them, but we had a group go out to North Platte. Lincoln County Sheriff's Department currently is the only county that's on the system. We did have a group go out to there, and if you'd like, they can speak of what they learned while they were in North Platte. It just pretty much put a little more icing on the cake on our side is why that we want to move forward with that state radio system. Some of the other systems we looked at was going to add more equipment than we already have, actually. We was going to have to keep as many sites, as we have now, if not more. And we'd have to maintain them ourselves. The nice thing about the statewide system, the infrastructure would be maintained, maintenance and such, by the state. We looked at a simulcast system similar to what Odo County has. We were going to have 2-3 repeaters, add some voting sites back to what we have now, and then someone locally was going to have to manage all that. So what we'd be adding to the statewide radio system, one of the things we'd be adding is it's called a RF combiner or a repeater, basically, to the Blue Springs Tower. One of the conversations we had just yesterday, or day before yesterday, I think it was, anyway, the days all kind of got tied in here towards the end, but We've even considered, the county may want to consider just entering into a contract and let the state take over that tower in Blue Springs. That would take the liability, the maintenance, upkeep, someone checking that tower constantly all the time out of the county's hands. So we talked to Mike Jeffries. He couldn't be here today. I don't know if anybody, okay, Corey's back there. He's with the state, so he's here to help. But what we talked to Mike Jeffries about, and he didn't seem to be that probably they would do that, is if we put that system on there, they would be willing to take over that tower. I take a lot of time, so you know, since I won't be here next time, but there's a lot of time spent on that tower. There's a lot of time spent on the tower that doesn't necessarily time that I take and drive down there because I live there. And so I'm able to look at it every day out in my back deck. I can see that the tower lights are working every night. And so that makes a big difference when you don't have anybody that's going to be down there to maintain that tower. It's a 465-foot tower, guided tower, that there's a lot of activity around that tower in the summertime. And so you want to make sure that's really in the summertime, babysitted quite a bit. So that's one of the things I wanted to bring up that isn't in this proposal, but keep in mind the state may be willing to just take that tower over, and that liability and the maintenance and upkeep of that tower would not be responsible to the county then. And then they would enter into a lease. We own the tower, we have agreement on the land from the city of Wymore. That's their well house there, so. So moving forward, just kind of go over the plan. Here, the tower equipment that we would add to that Blue Springs tower would be $300,000, what we talked about before. Tower and shelter upgrades, that would include adding a generator to that tower, tower inspection, some tower remediation, a grounding cable, etc., changing a little bit of electrical. One of the things to keep in mind, that we'll use more electricity with this system on there. We put the new lighting system on that tower. Our electric bills used to be about $300 and some odd a month. With the new lights on there and rewiring what we did, it dropped down to about $125. So that helped out a lot. But so there will be a little bit of increase on that, on the tower and electrical. City Chief Lang is here today with Lieutenant Oliver. We talked about what it would take for dispatch to be able to monitor the deputies, to dispatch the deputies with this system. That part of their system at the current would be $10,181. One of the things we're looking at doing through this whole project and meeting and talking with the city and Motorola and the vendors and such is that our process would be the county deputy sheriff's emergency management would come on the system now, with the next step either being a console, replacing the console at the city, eventually going, bringing the city on board, the police department also. So instead of trying to do this all in one big project, we felt phasing this in over a couple-year period would much better fit our needs. And as we go into it, a smaller, little baby steps, I'm going to say, might be a better deal than taking one big chunk at one time and having so many issues at one time. As we phase into it, those issues wouldn't probably be there at all. So we're talking, and financing is a big part of that too, for the city and for us. So their part right now, currently, they could dispatch us with $10,181, which is a consulette. They currently have a statewide radio consulette in their system that is paid for by Homeland Security. They use that right now to patch in the deputies or the city officers into the state patrol or state agencies. They're working on that. It's starting to work out a lot better. There's a few bugs to work out there, but they are almost daily practicing that. So they're getting used to the statewide radio system. For the Sheriff's Department Emergency Management, for 51 portable radios, and the count that we have is on the back of that first page. There's a count. It spells it out a little better. 51 portables total, 20 mobiles portable, or 20 mobiles total with installation and antennas, etc., would run the county $468,702. And like you said, like I said, on the back, it kind of gives you a breakdown of what we'd have, sheriff's, corrections, and emergency management. So in case you're wondering to know what we'd be doing there. If you look back on the front page, the equipment, we kind of broke it down, who pays for what. The combiner, $300,000, would be the county's. Tower improvements at $50,000. And that's probably good. That's high. We didn't get a chance. I had bid a couple local generators, but looking at some of the things the state has on their new generators where they can monitor it. I think, Corey, you can monitor your generators from your office. So
we can do full monitoring. We can start them remotely. We can see if there's any issues and what the errors are, if they have an issue. So we can dispatch a repair crew ASAP to fix the problem if there is.
So that we put in a lump of $50,000 and thinking that will be plenty enough to cover that. So we'll have to work with them on what type of generator they have at other sites that will work that way. Dispatch consulate will be responsible to Beatrice is $10,181. Radios and accessories. The accessories include chargers for the portables, holsters, speaker mics, extra batteries for the portables. So the radios, accessories, $468,702 would be the county's. And then I know we've talked, City of Wymore has asked me to come down tonight to talk to the city council about this, of what we're going to do with, you know, how Wymore is going to phase into this. And that's for their radios, for their mobile radios and portable radios that they would need at a minimum would be $38,600. And that would be their responsibility. I don't know how that's going to, you know, they want me to present it tonight to the council. They're getting a new chief and whole turnover down there, so they're just kind of wanting the information now. And so you know, too, you know, if in 2 weeks from now we vote on this, you vote on this, it's still a 4 to 6 month out project. So it's not something you put in a couple days. You know, it's still to get the equipment in, to get the licensing done, to get the tower ready, tower climbing crews stuff. We're still talking a 4 to 6 month project. So I want to explain that to the city of Wymore, too. It's not something. Their advantage is that's going to stay up for 4 or 6 months. The sheriff's department's disadvantage is the tower. And as you know, if you travel to Lincoln, as soon as that water tower is painted in Cortland, that other tower is coming down. Within a few weeks so of that. So, and then the Claytonia Towers this summer, the project's going there. So I didn't have a big specific date. When I talked to them there, they just know it's going to, as soon as they're done in Cortland, they're going to kind of move to Claytonia, I assume. So the total cost for the county at this point, we estimated at $818,702. That's using the counts and the figures that we have. Attached, you'll find the information on the radios that we're looking at from Motorola and also the quotes. Doug is here from First Wireless. If you have questions on the quotes, I'd like to, you know, Tony's here from Motorola, Motorola representation here. Corey's here from the state. Chief Lang and Lieutenant Oliver and everybody. So hopefully I brought a group together that if we have questions, we can answer them for you today. So I'm going to turn it over, I guess.
I'm looking at Bruce. are we done with Mark at this point? Any questions for Mark? Otherwise, I want to jump in.
I'm just going to move over to the other table here.
Make a note, too, that we do have Tobias Templemeyer from the city here also.
And I would think, you know, one thing with regards to the Blue Springs site, that should be maintained by the state. I don't know why we'd want to maintain one site, you know, that's different from the rest of our sites and not have them maintain it.
And that was something we never, you know, we just come up with that in the last day or two. It was actually jokingly I asked, well, so would the state just like take over that tower? Yeah. So, you know, he has a couple things to do. But I think, my opinion, that would be the best thing you can do because I know how much that is to take care of that tower.
On both sides.
Yeah. So...
Mark, just a minute. Yeah. So the advantages over the system we have now compared to this one are what then?
One, it works. We have better coverage. We're looking at upgrading the technology. What we have now is 13 years old. You know, it needs to be upgraded. It's just like any other type of radio or communications or technology out there. the biggest thing is the coverage it provides, and then the interoperability. As you know, and as emergency managers across the state, every meeting we go to is interoperability. You know, that's why we're adding microwave systems to water towers here in the county. That's why we're FirstNet program, which is the federal broadband system. All this is technology that's driven by the federal government. This system here is P25 compliant. We can add to it. You know, it's going to be around for a long time. I think Tony could talk a little bit about that. But I feel the biggest thing is a public service problem we have now, not only for deputy safety but for the public safety. You know, if there's a deputy, if there's a problem in a community, and they can't get a hold of the deputy that's there or is there, you know, there could be a problem for the public. So, I think as far as public safety is probably the biggest issue, and it's going to work. We've tested it enough; we feel that it's going to work. So,
and this is strictly for the sheriff's department.
And emergency management, yeah.
And emergency management. And the highway department will still be run differently then?
Yeah, it'll still be on its own. And that'd be the next step of the, you know, whoever comes in my position, I would recommend them. We need to start. We are in the process of putting the tower up at the county shop there in Adams. So,
cost to run that highway department then, what are they estimated at?
You mean as far as if we moved them?
Keeping the equipment the way it is. No.
It's a monthly fee. I'm not sure what they pay, but they continue to pay Schaefer's that monthly fee.
Okay.
But to get away from that monthly fee, to take and move that repeater off to another site. And some of that, probably some of that equipment that we're taking out, we could probably add to it a little bit or move it around and get that highway department off of that tower that you're paying the monthly fee on. The problem is to find one tower in the county that will serve the whole county highway department. The one where it's at now, it's working. But to move them, you're almost going to have two sites for that, to get that. And there again, we have equipment, so you understand too, part of the deal would be the state, and we'd want to make sure this is in the agreement, if they take over that tower, that we're still allowed to put equipment on there for free. That's the only way I told Jeffries we would do it. Because you have paging on there now for the South departments. You have the South Fire Channel on there. And if you wanted to move the Highway Department channel that to that tower, I would allow the state, you know, I would ask the state that be done. Jeffries says they do that currently now. There's state-owned towers that allows local government to be on for free. But I'd want that written spelled out. My opinion, a goal would be is that when this system's all in place, is to get the highway department moved off of that tower they're on currently to get away from that monthly fee. So if you utilize, let's say, the tower in Adams and the tower in Blue Springs for the highway department, it's free, you know, instead of what you're paying now. And you're going to have some extra equipment. We didn't touch very much on that, but repurposing the old equipment that we have, some of it would be for, you know, my recommendation is go through it, inventory it, keep a small cachet, and sell the rest. You know, or move it. If there's something, the highway department may need an extra radio, move one of them radios to the highway department. But then just surplus the rest, because what's going to happen is you'll put them on a shelf, and then 5 years from now, they're not going to be nothing because they went to another band or whatever, you know what I'm saying? But currently, if the highway department's in need of some equipment, there's an opportunity for the highway department to get equipment just allocated from the sheriff's office inventory, emergency management inventory to the highway department, so...
And while those are separate charges, like for the tower rent for like the highway department and that, they're relatively small charges, aren't they, in compared to?
Yeah, they are. I think they pay around $3,000 a year or something like that, where they're at now. The issue we have, one of the issues would even start a lot of this too, is that we don't know how much longer that cable TV tower will be up there that the highway department's on. Mm-hmm. You know, they keep saying, you know, they only have one antenna on there now. The cable company does. And once that comes down, they don't know, you know. So
they could end our contract.
What's that?
They could end our contract or our use of
it.
Yeah.
So,
are there any, we're very much Motorola here. Are we in any kind of a situation where this needs to be bid in order to comply with statute? All we see here are bids from Motorola and First Wireless.
There's more people to explain it probably better than I can, but currently the only type of radios that works on the statewide system is the Motorola radio. The pricing we have there is a state bid price. So they've already went out and bid these radios out for state bid price. So the quotes you have from our local vendor, which is First Wireless, is a state bid price. It's not a price that anybody else could. They have to go by the state bid pricing. And it has to be a Motorola radio to work on the statewide system.
And we have Lincoln County that's done this. Anybody else in the state that's done it? Our 93 counties?
No. Lincoln County's been on a little over 2 years. There's some other counties. I think there's about six other counties. We're ahead of them a little bit, but they're in the same process of looking to go into the statewide system. So,
what happens when the statewide system goes out? Goes down?
Yeah. Corey, could you like to come up, Corey?
Sure.
I'll stay right here, too.
From the OCIO, Mike Jeffries is my boss. When we did the coverage testing here in Gage County, currently we have two towers that cover Gage County. We have one that we call our Beatrice Tower. It's actually west of Beatrice. And then we have our Sterling Tower, which is slightly north of Sterling. With that, the Beatrice Tower actually covers about 75% of the county, minus the northeast corner, and that's covered by the Sterling Tower. With the Blue Springs Tower, you're actually going to get a lot of redundancy, and we just did portables, by the way. We're not doing mobiles. We had portable coverage throughout the whole county. With the Blue Springs Tower, you're going to have redundancy. In our system, we have never lost more than one site at a time in any given area. Usually it's related to a power failure, or we've got something related to an antenna issue, things like that. Those are kind of one tower issues. We've never lost a group of towers on purpose, or unintentionally or anything like that. We also have something called dual master sites. There's a master site in Lincoln, there's a master site in Kearney. The one in Lincoln is in my building for the OCIO, so it's a state-owned building. Obviously, we have generators, backup, things like that. The other master site is with our partner of NPPD, Nebraska Public Power, and it's in Kearney, in their location. So we have diverse stuff there. All of our network lines that we're doing for our towers, we try to do diverse network paths. Some towers have higher priorities than others to get two lines to it, but we're doing that continuously where every tower we're going, we have a minimum of one path, but we always try to get two different type of paths to it for network-wise. So we're building a redundancy left and right. Like he said, we do generators. So if we do have a loss of power, boom, the generator takes over, we're still up and running. We do diverse network paths. We're not relied on just Verizon or... I don't remember all the phone companies, all this. But we don't go through one carrier and say that we're stuck with one carrier at any given place. We always try to do two different ways, whether it's microwave or landline. So we build in redundancy. Again, I can't. There's no radio system out there that will give you 100% coverage 100% of the time. But our goal is to do 95% or greater on both of those. Those are just the expectations. And like I said, we lose Beatrice. Your Blue Spring Tower is going to cover vast majority of the county. We'd have to lose three towers so you'd have zero coverage in this county. And the likelihood of that has been very, very low. We've been operating for over 5 years, and typically a typical outage that we have, the worst outage we've had is 3 days. Most outages are hours at any given time.
That's my question. Is if it's been working so great for the last 5 years, we've never had any outages or any problems. Why do we need new towers? You said everything has worked fine. We haven't had any outages for the last 5 years. Everything has been great.
That's
on my state system. But my understanding on why we're looking at the Blue Springs Tower is for redundancy and also portable coverage. Yes, we did do a testing. It was portable coverage, but that was outside of buildings. To get inside of buildings, you have to have a stronger signal, so you need more tower footprint coverage to get that. And I believe the sheriff and all that will talk a little more about what their expectations are. But to get that portable coverage, you need to have more towers. Right now, our system is designed for mobiles, but for, again, redundancy, especially for portables, you need more towers to get better coverage.
If we give you the Blue Springs Tower, does that save us the $50,000? Is that before?
By my understanding, no. Unfortunately, I'm the technical guy. I do a lot of subscriber equipment, the actual radios. So when it gets into the financial side of it, I cannot give you an answer because I don't know. But by my understanding, that's the setup to get the Blue Springs going. There may be something that works with that, but again, that's outside of my realm. I can't say yes or no to that.
And we just didn't have enough time to get to that. That was one of my questions back to Mike, but he didn't have enough time to get that answer back. So, but he agreed that. One of the things is, you know, most of the state operates on this system, has to pay the office, the OCIO, a user's fee, a monthly user's fee. At a state level, the state patrol, each user fee pays about $140, I think it was. Our proposal and Mike Jeffries' proposal, because of what we're doing to enhance the system, not only enhances it for us, but it ultimately enhances and adds redundancy and everything to this system, they would be waiving that user's fee for us. A common user fee for what they've based that upon for counties or cities to come on is about $22 per user. A user includes one portable and one mobile. So in return of us purchasing that money, we would sign, I believe it was 15-year agreement that we would not have a monthly user fee. So we're paying up front. North Platte did the same thing. They added some equipment. They still pay a very small user fee. They pay user fee, but it's very small. Where ours would be, and then that would be written into the agreement that our user's fee is at this time would be zero. So those things that we're adding to it now up front, we would be out of having to pay that user's fee monthly for the next 15 years. So,
and Mark. And in response to Denny's question about, you know, other options and that, you know, for the full board next time, we'll have a summary of the other options we looked at and their costs. And also, you know, like if we provide this equipment or if we just provided it, paid the user fee, you know, how it would break down. Because right now.
I'm not going to answer. I mean, if someone's going to take that position on, I guess if Chief Sheriff was, I mean, I'm not going to be here to do that. So. Someone's going to have to come up. We have some figures. You know, we didn't spend a lot of time on finishing up because it got the simulcast system got up to be about $750,000, and we still maintained everything.
Uh-huh.
The Kenwood option of this, I was very familiar with another option that Kenwood provided where they had this installed, and currently they're replacing that. So. They couldn't give me a place that I could go see this system work in place that actually worked. So that was getting the Kenwood system would not allow us to communicate with anybody unless they had one of those radios. So we kind of right away that kind of went out, by the wayside. It got over $400,000 they were talking about spending on that, but again. If we wanted to communicate with anybody else, they had to have one of our radios. We couldn't do anything else but that. So that wouldn't work for us. That wasn't interoperable. It wasn't going to work. So we went down the path of the simulcast system and this system. So we looked at three systems, but the simulcast system got up to be about $750,000 because we were looking at three sites, Tony, I think.
Three transmit sites
and four voting sites. So all we did was take those seven sites we're going to get rid of and replace them with seven more that we'd be responsible for.
And certainly with, you know, this all being on the state contract, you know, we can do that. But to spend that much money, I would think we would want to compare with, you know, what our other options were at that time.
I've got copies I can provide to other simulcast stuff. So, I mean, we have some quotes. I think there's still... Should be, Doug, still stuff out there. Yeah. So we'll try to get that in together. I guess I want to express my opinion on that is that I have several, I mean, over the last 6 months, I can honestly say I have over way over 1,000 hours wrapped up myself.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't include, so when you go down a path that takes a lot of hours to go, you know, down and research and testing and sending people out and moving things, everything else to do this testing that we did, you know, the more we went that way, the less we looked at the other system because of all the advantages and interoperabilities that we were looking at the statewide system. So,
and if that's there, you know, a summary of that would give us justification for going down this route.
Yeah, we can come up with some. I'll make sure that's done. I'll make sure that's completed. I'll get the information and they'll bring it for you. We'll get it. Actually, we'll try to get it to you before the next meeting. So I'll get that done.
Mark. You did, John.
Nope,
sorry. First question: our user fees are covered for what we come onto the system with. In that 15 years, if we add more users, or say the city comes on board, will we be under that same $0 user fee program on that? If we have more users, or say we can help city out here and have no fee for them too.
Yeah.
Is that been discussed, or is that a possibility? Or Doug's shaking his head like he knows something.
I don't know very much, but I do know something. It has been discussed.
For the record.
Doug Klaus, Sheriff's Office. It has been discussed. We had a couple conversations down at one of our meetings that we had the police department there. The conversation as far as the user fees for in the future, we don't know the answer to that after 15 years. If the city comes on board, Mike Jeffries, we discussed that briefly, is not the consulate, but if they, when we go to this system and it's complete and we have to go to a full console instead of a consulate, what is that, around 100,000, I think.
150,000.
That would be essentially, they would be contributing something to the system as well. Like we would be with the tower. So that possibility for a zero or minimal user fee would kind of balance out like what we're doing.
Okay. I had a second question, but it's escaped me.
I want to get to the city. I want to hear from those guys. So
we're
going to have more questions. So we can.
Well, he's here, still here though. Yet in this agreement, and all of our units, mobile units, or even the portables, who's responsible for maintenance or upkeep on any of those?
The maintenance of the portables and mobiles will be our responsibility, although they're under a 5-year warranty.
5-year warranty, but. So that part of this system, the state is just maintaining basically the antennas and those
repeaters
or towers. They're not any of the just so we know whose is whose.
Right.
I guess
my answer to that is how our system is set up. Again, it's a closed system. So basically, your initial actual creating the program for the radios and everything else is done by our office for all the trunking stuff. Any of your conventional information you want to put in there, that would be your local radio shop. So part of that programming aspect is done by us, because we've got to have the right information in there, give you access to the system, things like that. So that part is us, and that's part of the whole user fee / agreement, whatever. The other thing we provide is training from the state, where we are more than willing to bring in our individuals to come train you guys or the users on how the radio works on the trunk system, how it's set up, all little buttons and bells and whistles and everything else that can be done. And that training, as we're going throughout the whole system, training is an ongoing thing. And that's something that we will also provide. The State Patrol is learning that about every year to 2 years they've got to do remedial training. We're part of that. We involve ourselves with that. As the radios need to be tweaked, changed, and things like that, this programming, that's part of the whole agreement that we still do. We still provide training. There's a lot that goes into it than just the old, here's a radio in your car, go out and have fun. So we try to work hand in hand with the radio shops, with issues that come up, whether it's a vehicle issue, a programming issue, things like that, so that the system is a success for the end user to use. So it's not just the infrastructure we provide. We provide a lot of support, too. Lincoln County was brought up. Whoever is the main point of contact usually gets my personal or my work cell phone number and my phone number. And I get calls all the time, and, hey, this is what's going on in the system or what we're seeing. I get on the system. I find out what's going on to provide answers and support. And it's generally within minutes to less than 24 hours that they're getting a response back of what's going on, how to fix the problem, if it's a problem they fix or it's a problem we fix. So there's a lot that goes into it.
So part of the contract is your support.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's not something where we say, you come along, hey, here's your radios, and go off and wander around. No, we're in it for the long haul goal. So.
They also have a monthly users meeting that's held in York, I think, at least this time it's being held in York. They recommended that someone from the group ends up going to this first users meeting coming up soon, but that's an ongoing type of thing. So there'll be a person from Gage County or a couple people that would attend that users meeting where a lot of information is shared on issues or things that they found and et cetera. So that's also something that they also offer. So.
Well, I think that's one of the reason I bring it up. One of the big issues we have now is the support. But basically, some of these companies, when you're calling them and we need work down here, they've lost their technicians or whatever, and you're almost throwing your hands up sometimes,
yeah.
You know. And going forward, I guess, will the state system not have as many issues? I mean, our equipment's old, and there's a lot of things with it, you know, and the state will continue to update and everything and give the support. That's part of what we need, I guess.
One of the things, and talking about the infrastructure and supporting that, what we do and how our system is that we do system upgrades every 2 years on the systems. That means any software that needs to be upgraded for operating system, things like that, all that gets touched every 2 years. If those upgrades require information that needs to be changed on the mobile radios, if it's a programming issue, we do it. If it's something like a firmware update, we have in place a way that we get firmware updates for the radios. There is a cost involved with that because obviously you have to have a radio shop come out and physically touch the radio and do the upgrade. But we buy the upgrade basically for the radios. That's part of how we do all of that stuff. So the support that you, as we go forward and as things change and as we upgrade, install stuff, you'll have access to it. We give access to it. And like the SUG meeting we talked about, which is a system users group, is that we provide all of that. And that's part of that contract. So,
what department do you work for the state?
I am Public Safety Communications. Which is a business unit inside of the Office of the Chief Information Officer. So that's OCIO. So I am...
So it's still Rod Armstrong, or...?
It's Brenda Decker is the Chief Information Officer. She is my boss, obviously. My boss's boss, so...
You have backup, I presume, because if you decide to leave next week, you said you can call you 24 hours a day and da-da-da.
There's two of us right now that work on the system that are... I'm going to call... technicians in that aspect that do a lot of the support and everything else. It's myself and Chris Hinesley, and either one of us are usually available by phone. We are in the process of looking to hire a couple more employees to provide more backup because as we're growing, we're finding more and more jobs that we have to do. And there's also been talk about the developing a state radio shop, which would become part of our organization. To provide support for the state agencies for their actual radio maintenance. But those people would be in the same boat of training and be able to support other users on the system to the level that we're able to support, that we're not taking business away from the local radio shops for the local agencies.
How does the state patrol communicate with us if they're off in the corner over here by Odell or by Liberty or somewhere, and you know, how do they communicate so everybody is communicated with?
Currently, we have what we call the ROC, which is Regional Operations Common Talk Groups, and that's the consulate that you heard about earlier, those Homeland Security. That's a common talk group that's actually in the Troop H area, which is the southeast corner of Nebraska. Everybody that's got a PSAP pretty much has one of these consulates. They're able to talk to each other through these talk groups and also the State Patrol, which then also includes State Fire Marshal, the game wardens, from Game and Parks, the auto fraud unit from Department of Motor Vehicles. You've got Department of Ag, the livestock sheriffs. I don't know their official title, so I apologize for that. And you have any other users on the state or on the statewide system that you can get to. MPPD, we're talking about, Lincoln Electric System, who's also on the system. You're going to be able to talk to them through these Rock Talk groups. They're just a common set of talk groups. The best way I can put this that a lot of people understand is if you remember the Nextel push-to-talk stuff where you had groups of people and you could talk to them, it's the same thing. It's just a group, a functional group, that you can get a hold of people. And the way you do it, this is a dispatch-oriented system. I'm going to use the State Patrol because everybody, that's the primary people that everyone wants to talk to. The dispatcher can get on that rock call the State Patrol, get a hold of their dispatcher.
The dispatcher. What dispatcher?
The State Patrol. Okay. Either your local county, I apologize, is it in the actual city dispatch?
Yes.
Okay, so your city dispatcher here in Beatrice, on their console, can get to this talk group that says HROC call. They can call the State Patrol. All your surrounding communities hear that for what they're saying and what they're doing, and they say, go to HROC 1, which is just another talk group, which gets it off so that we're not lighting up Richardson County, down in Fall City, all that Nebraska City. We're not lighting up those counties. They're not hearing communication that is not pertinent to them. You just go to off a different talk group, and you're able to talk. If one of your neighboring counties says, hey, this could involve me, they can follow you so they can hear what's going on. At that point, the State Patrol can patch their troopers into that talk group or have their troopers actually go to that talk group, and now they're part of that party. Your local dispatch can patch in whatever agency or resource that they want into it, and there's been some issues with the patching, but it's being worked on to make it functional. But now you have end-user to end-user talking.
Okay, well, my reason for questions is that if it's working, and if the State Patrol now communicates with the Sheriff's Office because we've got an emergency here,
mm-hmm.
Is it working, or aren't we able to get a hold of people?
I got to put them because I'm not the end user. I can't say if it has or has not worked.
The state system is working. What's not working is our local county system.
How come the county can't be part of this and the county go into this, whatever you call that thing, and you communicate with the State Patrol and through the state system?
Well, because they're still, currently they're still using their current radio system, which is your UHF voted system, if I am correct. And by my understanding, you're losing some towers, some water towers, and the system obviously has its upkeep and everything else. That's the system that they're using. This consulate that's at their dispatch is just taking their local resource of that UHF voted system and basically putting a phone line between the two and piping it off onto our system. Now, if this part of your system fails, my phone line still works. But if this doesn't work over here, your sheriff is never going to talk because it never gets through that patch. And that's the reason I understand that you're talking about coming onto the statewide system, so no longer do you need your system to still be working to be able to talk to my stuff, to my people, because you're going to become my people, and my people can always talk to each other. So
it's our system that's failing. It's the voting system that's failing.
Because we're losing communication towers, and we went to narrowband, and we lost
coverage.
So that's where we were looking at. We got to do something. And so with the cost continuing to go up, there seemed to be some merit in looking at the state system to say it'll provide coverage and do these other things, which is why I really want the city to come up. Keep looking at Bruce. I want them to come up because they are going to be half, maybe two-thirds of the pie of how the communication works. And then they can speak directly to that system.
I'll step down in case I need to come back out. So.
Bruce Lang, Chief of Police, City of Beatrice. Little history, make sure that everybody understands how it works. Contractually, the City of Beatrice operates the communication center for all of Gage County. We contract with the county for dispatch services. We contract with the City of Wymore. We contract with the Homestead National Monument to provide all those different entities with dispatch services. The contract reads that we will provide communications that allows us to communicate without overusing that word, with the various units that we, entities that we have under contract. By that, I mean we will provide a mechanism to talk to the sheriff's office by whatever means that they have. So in this case, when we're talking about going to a statewide radio system, we would be contractually obligated to provide a means to talk to that statewide radio system. Thus, we accept the fact that we're on the hook for $10,181 in the middle of my budget year. However, we understand that we're willing to accept that responsibility. Danny, going back to your first question, if we could talk to the State Patrol, why do we need to go to this? A, we can't talk to the State Patrol. Haven't been able to talk to the State Patrol, never have been able to talk to the State Patrol. That's never happened. State Patrol can talk to the State Patrol, and we can talk to us. The two have never communicated, never shared radio frequencies. They've never been able to talk directly to each other. With the beginning of the statewide radio system, and as that system is being tweaked and made better, we're working towards that. So that, you know, with the different rock groups and the glazed look that you all get, I have that on every time we start this discussion, so I can appreciate it, because it does get pretty confusing. But the talk group thing, we're, as far as patching them together, we're in the process as we speak of testing that. It's going better. That doesn't deal with day-to-day communications. Day-to-day communications is really what you people are dealing with right now, and that is a dispatcher needs to send a deputy to a disturbance in Blue Springs, or he needs or she needs to send a deputy to Adams for take a report, or all of those kind of things, or a deputy makes a traffic stop in Claytonia, and he needs or she needs to be able to communicate with the dispatch center immediately. Because of your coverage issues, you have some problems with that. And so the statewide radio system apparently has the is a solution for that problem. Is it the only solution? Probably not. But the question is it the best solution? We sent people to Lincoln County where they're doing this, and it seems to be working. And everything that that we're learning about it seems to point us that, in that direction, that it's working. But it, obviously, it's your decision as to what system you go to. Once you decide what that is, we'll link up to make sure we can talk to that. If it's a statewide radio system, we understand our obligation, and that is to install this consulate to do that, and we're comfortable doing that. We do believe it will work. We think that there's no reason why it wouldn't, from what we're seeing. And, you know, Myron, you mentioned a little bit about who's going to take care of what parts. Well, anytime you've got a lot of people relying on a system, not just us, there's going to be a lot of people tap dancing on Corey's desk if it doesn't work, because there's a lot of people at stake here. It's, this thing's able to handle a lot of different users. And so that's a good thing, because that shares the cost. You know, the old day of, you know, everybody had to have their own little piece of the pie here, and nobody, you know, we didn't want anybody to mess with it. And, well, those days are over. We got to quit thinking like that. We have, you know, if we can share costs, share resources, share this technology that, you know, Nebraska, the whole state of Nebraska in the world of communications is little. We're small. You know, there's states that have regions bigger than the population-wise in the state of Nebraska, and they do it very easily. So it can be done, and we're not inventing any wheels here. So our position from the city simply is that if you choose to go with this, we can communicate with them. We can support it. We will dispatch for them. We think that it's a workable path that you've chosen. And with that, I'll answer. And I do want to introduce Lieutenant Mike Oliver. He's our day-to-day guy in communications now. He's a guy that has all the headaches, and he used to be 6'8", and now he's getting work down. And Tobias, the city administrator, is here if anybody has any questions for him as well. So,
I guess that, he should be a captain, not a lieutenant.
Well, you'd think so, but that's not going to happen.
I have a question. Does the city have any intentions of going on to this system?
Well, here, that's a great question. It's a good system, but let me tell you where we're at, and that is that right now what we have is working. And, you know, our ticket for this would be equal to yours in the $750,000. So I'm going to have to get to a position where we're starting to not work, or we're going to gradually go to it. By that I mean we might start phasing in portables and mobiles that are dual channel, like the one you're looking at here, that we could use statewide and local, and then phase it in over a period of time. But in good faith, I can't go to the city fathers and say, well, hey, I want to spend this money. And they say, well, is it working? I say, yeah, ours is working fine. You know, you don't have that luxury because yours isn't working, but ours is. So the actual switchover, there's not an urgency for us. Do I see that happening? Yes. Will it happen for us tomorrow? No. So
we're fortunate to be blessed in the county that we have such a vast area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So we have to cover that. In the city of Beatrice,
Oh, there's no question about that. Yeah. Right. And without getting into all the technical stuff that makes our eyes glaze over, you know, one tower, one repeater serves the city of Beatrice quite well. And a tall enough tower, we can serve this corporate city of Beatrice quite well. So we don't have some of those issues that Myron pointed out.
I see the city of Lymore is, you are talking to them, tonight or this week, about going with this. What about the other communities in Gage County? Will we be able to communicate with them if we go the statewide system? And
they're the only ones that have a law enforcement agency. So,
oh, okay.
This is not at this point. Correct me if I'm wrong. This does not incorporate fire and ambulances at this point.
Right. No.
So this is just law enforcement. So they're the only other law enforcement agency in the county.
And then the Homestead would be on.
And the Homestead, right.
They already have the equipment to be on. Right. The Homestead does.
So do we have to maintain separate equipment for the fire and emergency?
Yes. There's three repeater sites and then four paging sites that we still would have to maintain.
Currently, as we talked before, we are sitting on 15 sites.
16
sites, excuse me. Currently, you'd be eliminating about half of those, and then you'd be running about half to continue on the fire sites.
Do we have neighboring states that have implemented this system? I mean, this basic system.
State of Kansas has a system. That'd be Tony there.
Yeah, probably Motorola guys can talk about that. And maybe I just touch briefly on the you mentioned about the bidding issue. I asked the same question. Why everything Motorola? The long answer was that they are exploring other vendors that may qualify to get on their system. They're not excluding them at this point, but they have to meet some technical thresholds. And at this point, they haven't met those in order to get on it. Then they can be part of the bid process, and the statewide bid process, as Roger can tell you, is an acceptable way to bid bid equipment. We do that on lots of stuff. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Name and address for the record, or association, which organization?
Tony Casiva with Motorola. To answer your question, there's 35 different states that have implemented statewide systems. Motorola is in 31 of those states. So we have implemented statewide systems all across the country.
And how many of those states would give it an A grade?
I think we work until they do. We work with each state. I mean, Corey and I, we talk all the time. I mean, I think my wife thinks that Corey and I are secretly, she's going to check the spelling of his name because we're talking so much. But we work with the state hand in hand. So you have NPPD, you have OCIO, and then you have Motorola supporting them in their guidance as well. So you've got a lot of staff and a lot of resources available to the statewide system.
And talking about NPPD, how does this work going forward where they own half the system and, you know, like, you know, the Blue Springs Tower that, you know, may be operated by the state, but Motorola is an equal partner, NPPD is an equal partner, right?
Right. They do have an agreement in place. As far as who actually takes that, as far as the OCIO and NPPD and how they split that cost, that would be between OCIO and NPPD. So they would have to address if they NPPD is going to split the cost of maintaining that tower site or how that would come out of the budget. But as far as addressing the question of the radio, yes, it is a Motorola system, and we do have Motorola radios working on the system. And I know the state has looked at providing other P25 radios that are available. I am, at that time, when they do meet the specs and they are able to come on, I am more than happy to take our radios and put them against anybody else in the marketplace. We do this all across the country. We bring in radios that are on competitive places, and we actually do sound demos to compare. We just did this in Omaha, and I am even when they do have radios available, I think that the sound and the ability to work on the system and what they can do for law enforcement, they've been proven time and time again.
And as far as Tony's support, Tony lives in Syracuse, so
yes,
he lives here in the state of Nebraska for Motorola. So,
questions for the gentleman from Motorola.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gus? Deputy Klaus, do you want anything you'd like to add?
I will tell you that I can't count the number of meetings that Doug and Mark and the hours and hours had put into this to get to this point in time. And honestly, I'm probably about as glazed in the eyes as you guys are. I'm still old school where you had a radio and one radio work for everybody. But those days are gone. So I had Doug... take lead on this for me because my plate's too full. But I will tell you from my perspective where I'm at as sheriff, the two concerns I have is one, the safety for my deputies. We have those issues where they cannot talk. I have been at accident scenes, quarter, half mile away, whatever, and you can see each other, but you can't talk. And the frustration level, I already get my blood pressure up. I don't need it any higher than that. So those issues happen to us all the time. Doug can probably tell you a lot of those because a guy will talk to him directly because he's in charge of the road patrol for me. The second concern I have, obviously, is going to be the liability. I always have that as a concern for the county. And so having those difficulties with communications and now how everybody's so sue happy nowadays, I really try to limit that liability for the county as much as I can. And that is certainly a concern for that out there for us to be aware of. We're talking communication and it can't happen. And we can't, and we're not doing something to correct it. So hopefully, through this process, something will come good from it. But that's pretty much my extent of what I would put out there. Unless there's questions, I can certainly field for you. But I think Doug can do a lot more of that for you than I can at this point.
Okay. John?
Certainly, I appreciate, I think we all appreciate the time that's been put in on this and all the comparisons that have been done. But I think in the final analysis, you know, me personally as a member of the board, you need to have some summary of the other one so that you can vote one in or out.
Oh, I'm not going to disagree on any of that. That's, yes, that's certainly a topic of discussion. Because I think the board, you're talking a lot of money, obviously.
Yep, it is.
So you're going to have everything you guys need out there. Absolutely, I would agree with that 100%. So, and there's something we need, and it's something that, well, Mark won't be around, which is obviously bad timing now with him being gone. And I just want to make sure that we all understand Doug is only doing this for this position here. I'm already getting calls at home because Mark's gone. They're asking me questions, and I did not want to get in that situation in my office. But I'll do what I can, and so will Doug. But we're not going to tie ourselves down to this like Mark has. So just for the record. Okay? Okay, thank you.
Just a real couple of short things. When you look at the attached state bid sheets and stuff for the different the portables, mobiles, and some of the accessories, and it gets a little bit convoluted and a lot of conversations back and forth, and is this a necessary expense? Is this a piece necessary? And try to get up to speed, you know, on, you know, for the future. I guess there's a lot of that we didn't, you know, build the Cadillac system, you know, with all the bells and whistles that, oh, that'd be great, you know. We tried to keep it down to reasonable things and for some future needs. And a couple of the things in there you'll probably notice on maybe the mobile and the portable side of it, the GPS functionality of that. There are still some things that are being put together through the OCIO and some different things to make those connectivity issues work to where in the future here that it'll be as a benefit for officer safety. They key up the mic on the radio. It gives a real-time location as to where they're at. So that was a feature that we made sure that we wanted to spec into that so we would have that capability for in-car and portable coverage as well. The conversations that we've had, you know, we did look at the simulcast system and stuff, and I would just kind of sound what Mark said on some of the concerns there and stuff. And the one thing with the user fee that Kathy had kind of brought up, and I was just kind of doing a little quick math back there and stuff, if we look at the $50,000 in tower upgrades that we would have to spend and then end up just giving it to the state, it might seem like that's just money we're throwing away. Even if we had our user fee, I think when we talked to Mike the other day, Mike Jeffries, he said the State Patrol, when they do some algorithm or whatever to figure out that cost analysis, you know, it's between $145 to $175 per user per month, I believe is what he said. Even if our user fee at 51, you know, was we would make it $50 a month and say, and you do that for a period of, for 1 year times 15 years, you know, the cost that we would have to put into that tower is far less than our monthly user fees would be over that 15-year period. So that is a plus, I guess, to us. And then when we have an issue, we don't have to worry about the maintenance and the upkeep of the system right now. And it's a self-monitoring system, essentially, and it would automatically send a notification, and we were comfortable and felt good about the redundancy, you know, of the system here in Lincoln and the system in Kearney. We would have the compatibility to talk with Lancaster. We work in Lancaster County a fair amount with some of their people and with the Marshal Service and some different things, and the interoperability with Kansas. Those are some of the benefits that we have locally, where we have worked on some missing persons cases and some other similar situations with Marshall and Washington County, Kansas. And we would have some ability through that in the conversations that we've had to be patched together, you know, with them to have that communication when it would be necessary. So.
Questions for Klaus? Any other questions for anybody? And sir, I forget your name. I know you spoke to us once before. Is there anything you'd like to share?
Well, I don't know. I'm Doug Ostergaard with First Wireless.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you. We would be the local representative that would be doing the installations of the radios and programming of the radios and that sort of thing. So I think everybody else has answered most of your questions that I don't think I have anything additional to share that they haven't already, unless you have any questions for me.
Doug, being as you stood up, this is kind of for you and Mark. The current system we're running, mm-hmm. Is the day coming when that thing's going to break and we're not going to be able to fix it? I mean, it seems like it's getting harder and harder. There's instances where we have issues that seems like it's getting harder and harder in order to, A, find the parts, or, B, find the people that can fix the parts.
Right.
Well,
everything's fixable for a price.
But the other issue we have is the Doug's company, First Wireless, can work on the outside voting system, but we have a sole vendor that we have to rely on to work on the main voting system right now.
We do not have access to the main site or the heart of the equipment.
Or their contract to that vendor that we utilize. Contract with Charter Communications. No one else is allowed in that building unless one of their vendor people are there, one of the charters there, and then anybody else. But they do not allow that. And and we lease part of that equipment.
So that situation will go away with this new system?
Yes. And currently some of the system I pay $365 a month to lease part of that system on that tower. So that will go away also. But the problem we have is that particular vendor has lost the technicians that I've worked with for the last 13 years. First Wireless technicians, Brian's been there for a long time.
Longer than me.
Yeah. So
17 years. And
I think Chief can chime in here, too, is that First Wireless does have a contract with the city communications to take care of their equipment and console also. We do not have a contract with them, but the 13 years that I've been here, we've worked with First Wireless. It was D&D to begin with. And then prior to that, 30 years ago when I started on the Beatrice Police Department, we were doing business with D&D, with First Wireless. So we've had the reputation from them working for us and doing work is very, very good. So, but the biggest issue is that we have a system that they cannot touch. They can do the out. We've actually have repaired one of the outside. Well, actually, we didn't repair it. We actually have the repeater that's in Adams is down, and they were able to find us one on loan. So we've been borrowing that for 4 months.
Yeah, quite some time.
About 4 months, they've allowed us to use it for free till we figure out what we're doing here, because I don't want to spend $8,000 on replacing that if we're going to be taking it out and going to the system. So there's things that aren't even working right now that we're borrowing equipment from First Wireless to get it to work even.
Sometimes I may want to add on that. The way the system was designed originally was very inexpensive, and the signal is transmitted back from the receiver sites through a radio frequency instead of a phone line. Phone lines would have been more expensive, but phone lines have less noise on them. It's a clearer form of communication. Now you have two different radio frequency links: the transmission from the radio to the repeater, and then after it's received there, it's then retransmitted back to the main site. So you're just adding to the noise levels, and I guess it's just not a great design from 13 years ago. Now it's 13 years old. We've narrow banded it. A lot of the equipment did not handle the narrow banding well at all. It doesn't perform well once it's been narrow banded. So, you know, yeah, we can band-aid this for quite some time to come, but it's never going to perform very well.
Ms. Kathy?
I don't know who this question goes to. The statewide system's been being used for 5 years, did you say?
It's been used over 5 years by the State Patrol. They started out in Troop E, which is the panhandle of the state, moved to the east. The State Patrol's been fully on the system for a little over 3 years. I was, prior to being with the OCIO, I was with the State Patrol as a radio tech, so I was involved in their installation, and then I got promoted into OCIO to actually be one of the system administrators.
Okay, that's not my question. Okay, right.
The system has been in place and used for over 5 years.
Over 5 years.
Fully has been used across the entire state slightly more than 3 years.
Okay. 13 years ago, Gage County bought our system, and I'm sure, I have no idea how much we paid for it, but I'm sure it was a lot of money, even though it was a cheap version of it. Are we buying into something that is state-of-the-art, or are we buying into something that is 5 years old on a 15-year-old life cycle?
I'll take that.
Okay.
That's a good question.
So one of the things that we do is we actually have a life cycle agreement with the state of Nebraska. So we don't run into that situation. What we do is every 2 years we update the software, the system, and the components. So we make sure that it's always on a new cycle in that regard, so that we don't always run into this, okay, it's 10 years old, we need to forklift it, 15 years old, we need to forklift it, okay, now state, you're going to, you know, it's a $50 million for the state, and the state looks to all the counties and says, here, give me a check. That's not what they're doing. It was designed as a redundant system, as we said before, and it is on a life cycle to where it is basically systematically updated every 2 years. So you're not buying into something that, okay, it's a Cadillac, but is it a five-year-old Cadillac, and what's going to go wrong? That's not the case. This is a case of the system is always meant to be updated so that we don't run into those kinds of problems.
Okay.
You might speak about the subscribers as well. Apex is being the newest one.
Oh, yes. So the Apex subscriber, the 7000 here, is the latest generation of Motorola portables, as well as the 7500 is the latest generation of mobiles. So we started developing digital technology into radios about 20-some years ago. Motorola as a company is developing radio about 80 years. I think most people probably recognize the name. And this is our fourth generation of digital radio. Obviously, I could bore you to death with all the technical specs. I don't want to do that. But one of the things, that it is designed with law enforcement and fire. We actually designed the radios with them and have them come into our labs and go through it. We put everything through ruggedized testing, way beyond the mil specs. One of the demos I did the other day for a customer, we actually cut the housing off there's a metal endoskeleton inside. We actually cut the housing off, put it in water for an hour. We had the remote speaker mic, and we were talking on it as this thing has been sitting in water for over an hour, kind of showing their ruggedness and durability. That's what they're concerned about is when I push this, it needs to go through every time. That's the officer safety component. That's what they care about. That's what we designed these to.
How about longevity on those? Because they're costing us $468,702.
Right. So typically people put these into about a 10-year life cycle. So they'll run these about 10 years, and then they start. We have customers that are – I got a call a couple weeks ago from a county out west that called me about getting a battery, and it was for – a radio that they had had for 17 years. You know, and then they're getting into a panic state because they're trying to find batteries and accessories for a 17-year-old radio, where we talked about, okay, we can help you out now, but you need to start putting away money. You know, don't wait until that 10th or 15th year to start doing it. At year 8, start budgeting, you know, putting into a honey hole to be able to replace them.
So we could look in 10 years, we could look at spending another $500,000, or of course, as it increases, possibly more than that for the radios and accessories.
Possibly. This depends on the use you get out of them. It's going to vary. I mean.
Okay. I just want to look at what we're looking at down the road to maintain also.
Right.
So
yeah, it could
the $800,000 isn't just what it's going to cost us. This is to get started, and then what it will cost to maintain as we get down the road.
Your equipment is going to be, you know, these radios will last, but, I mean, do not think of this as a 20-year, you know, you're not going to buy them once for the next 20, 25 years.
Okay.
We just need to be aware. If you get that out of them, great. That's a great story for everybody.
But that cost will be there no matter which system we go with.
Yes.
I mean, that's
right.
Not just to this system. Yeah, pertinent to this system. Yeah,
and,
correct.
And their life may be 10 years, but you probably depreciate them over 5 years. For electronics, I'd be surprised if you want to go more than 5 years.
In the 13 years I've been here, we've replaced the Sheriff's Department radios 3 times. This will be the 4th time in 13 years we've had to replace. No.
Okay.
You mean there are other radios other than Motorola's?
Not in my mind.
And I think it's a good time to mention this, too, is when we're talking about this, is that in 13 years to replace the Sheriff's Department system, the original cost of the repeater system that we put in 13 years ago, I've got the quote, was $78,000. There was a system that was similar to this that we're looking at now. Not I shouldn't even say similar. There was a system that would work similar to that that we bid at that time, and the county board chose not to go with that, and it was about a $250,000, $300,000. I don't remember if Doug, I know Dick was there then, but and Joe, I don't remember what it was, but they chose to go with the lower cost of the systems. And so the other thing is that keep in mind, since 9/11, we have, except for upkeep and maintenance and some repairs, some installations, the county has not spent any money on radio equipment. So I've upgraded this system, and as far as the console system itself, that was paid for with Homeland Security money, the officers' radios at the police department, the sheriff's office, the mobiles, that's all been replaced for zero because of Homeland Security money. So this is something that a lot of counties have not been fortunate enough to do that. So it's something to keep in mind. Have we spent money over the years on some maintenance and upkeep and everything? Also the pagers and all the radios and portables for the fire departments were paid for by Homeland Security and the repeater system. Actually, that was a FEMA fire grant that we wrote through Philly Fire. So all this stuff that we've done over the last, like I said, this will be the 4th time in 13 years we look at replacing the sheriff's radios because we did not buy equipment that was, it was less cost, therefore it doesn't last as long. It's not rough and tough. So through our meetings and conversations and cooperation with all the agencies across the county, I've been really fortunate to be able to work with all these agencies, and we've been able to get that Homeland Security money to replace that. The question was earlier in another meeting, is there money out there now to do this with Homeland Security? And there isn't. There's some regional money. That's all going right now to the microwave system. So we probably would have spent this much you know, we've received over $1 million in Homeland Security money over the last 10 years. So we would have spent a lot of money over the last years to replace this stuff. So,
yes, John.
This is for Corey or Tony, but the statewide radio system has been in the panhandle for 5 years for the state patrol and in the rest of the state for 3 years. And Lincoln County came on when?
Lincoln County came on just over 2.5 years ago. That was one of my first projects that I did with the OCIO. And they had done some work prior to that, but they've been on 2.5 years strong.
And are there any other counties that are fully on the, as
not
far as
law enforcement? We do have, like I said, Lincoln Electric Systems on the system. Also, it's a smaller, not statewide agency. We also have Burke Public Power is on, but they are on a very minimal. They don't have a lot of people anyway that work there. They've got 4 radios on the system that they've been using for about 1.5 years now. We do have the U.S. Marshals, FBI, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has been on for a little over 2 years. FBI has been on for about 1 year. U.S. Marshals have been on for a little over 2 years. So we have other agencies besides state agencies that have been on the system, worked very well. We've had very little issues with them being able to operate, interoperate with the patrol, things like that. DEA, ATF, any other three-letter organization you can think of that's fed, they're allowed to come on our system for free because they gave us frequencies and some resources. So really any federal agency that you can think of can come on our system and will be allowed on our system pretty easily.
How many other counties considered coming on the system?
I'm going to resort to Tony because I know he's been talking to a lot, but I know Seward County has,
Seward, Chagrin, North North Platte is doing some additional things in Lincoln County. Bird. There's probably about 6 different counties right now that are in this process. What happens is they're in a similar situation to where they have conventional equipment that is starting to fail. They're in a situation to where they need to look at something, and they look at this and saying, okay, I don't have to maintain it. I can share the cost. And I get the interoperability. It's a pretty compelling story. And so when the county is in that position, that's when we're working with them.
I will add, Nemaha County here have installed radios in their patrol cars. And they aren't on as a full-time user. They are on as an interoperable user. Sheriff there has told me that it would save him any money, which it doesn't, because he already got paid site rent and stuff for his fire departments. He would go on as a full-time user, but he'd still have to maintain all the other equipment anyway. So.
And the reason no other counties have come on in the last 2.5 years is because of the cost, or what's the?
Well, we've been sort of at a position to where we've been working with the state and getting all the state users on and working with the different agencies. And through the utilities, and then we're kind of at a point within probably the last 12 months that we've been kind of going to the locals and working with the locals and having a plan to come on. So it is relatively new in that regard to where, okay, we're ready to start bringing the locals on and getting those agreements in place and how we're going to do that.
So in the last 12 months, you've turned your focus to the counties away from the agencies.
Right. To add to that is... We're finishing up what we call in our project phase, which is the actual contract, getting everything installed, getting everything on. Like Tony was saying, we're right at that tail end of tying up the contract, signing it off, and we're done with the actual installation project. We have now gone into the phase of expansion. We're slated for 3 towers, if I remember right, to be coming up and operational here in the next month. And that's not part of the original contract. So that's like we've shifted gears from let's get the system in, get it working, and now we're on the gear of expansion. How can we bring other people on? How can we bring more resources? Other coverage issues that we need to address and things like that. So that's where our focus has shifted in the last 12 months. So that's to answer your question. That's why we haven't had a lot of counties. We haven't been able to have the time to come out and talk to boards and everything else to explain what we have and what we can offer. just because we weren't ready to say, this is what we have and this is what we have to offer, because we weren't finished with the project.
All right. Thanks.
And then I'm sorry to add one more thing. There were some questions about interoperability in other states surrounding. We have been in contact with the Missouri, Kansas, Wyoming. Yeah, that's pretty much it, right? For what they call ISSI, which is basically we can link their system to our system and be able to talk to their users back and forth. So those are things that we are actually are looking for surrounding states and everything else to be able to talk to them directly also. And then that's a technology that Motorola provides, and it's also a P25 standard, if I'm incorrect.
Yes, there is a P25 standard for ISSI. So obviously, since they are Motorola systems in 31 of those states, then when you get regional states that want to talk to each other, we can then tie those systems together. So as an agency needs to go across borders, they're able to go across borders and use the RF footprint in that state.
What does ISSI stand for?
Inter-system. Something. I can't remember. It's a big long
system
word.
Interoperability, I believe.
There you go, yes.
We're loaded with acronyms, sorry. Inter-system.
That's okay. If you don't know, that's all right. We'll forgive you for that.
Basically, what it does is it allows them to talk over a data network. It's hooking up two local LAN area networks, or local area networks, to each other, so you have what they call a WAN or a wide area network.
I understand that. I just like to know what acronyms stand for.
I understand. So, understand.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you to everybody who was here today. In 2 weeks, when I have this on the agenda to take action, in that time frame, it would be nice if we could get a price/product comparison between the simulcast, did I use that term right? Mm-hmm. Simulcast system versus the state system. Get those to us ASAP so we can look at those final costs. I did give a note to Dawn and ask her to look at NACO lease rates for 3, 5, and 7 years from anywhere from $800,000 to $900,000 just to see what's out there. Budget's coming up. So.
I just threw out, I did talk to him probably a month and a half ago for a $500,000 one for 5 years was all-inclusive 1.8% rate, interest rate. But I haven't talked to anybody. If Don will get that type of comments, that would be great and stuff. And I'll also just put this out at our finance committee next time. We'll have a discussion on finance of this so that when we have a discussion at the board, we're not just all sitting here looking at each other, hopefully. So.
Well, that would be my question, Meyer. Where's the money coming from?
Right, and in finance, all right. At our finance committee next Monday, I'll try and come up with a couple thoughts or ideas, and then we'll visit about them some more, and then we'll have them available for the board. Because this, earlier we were talking about, at least in my mind, $500,000, now this is $800,000 and stuff. So
are you thinking we're going to be ready to vote on accepting this or doing this or not doing this at the next meeting when we don't know where the money's coming from yet?
Well, that's what we're going to spend the next 2 weeks proposing where it could come from. I think we're at a point where we have to make a decision here. There's been months of discussion here, and if the decision is to not go down the state route, which is the route that we've kind of gone down, if we're not going to do that, then we've got to go the other route. My understanding is the costs are going to be similar. And I hate to say this, within $100,000. I mean, we're not throwing around chump change here, but I think we've got to make a decision to give everybody who's involved with this some indication of where we're going and what we're doing. I think there's been good discussion. We've uncovered a lot of stuff, but at some point we've got to make a decision as to what we're doing, because as we sit here and talk, there's communication that isn't taking place out there. Okay.
Can I add something before, because it won't be here next time, but just keep in mind, someone still has to maintain the system. I mean, there's still a person that has to be, so there's a lot of information there. We're gonna take a tour tomorrow, I think, right? Yeah, Lieutenant. We're going to take a trip tomorrow, Joe Hawkins and myself and Russ Jobman and Lieutenant Oliver, and I'm going to take them out and show them everything we have. It's going to be an all-day excursion. If we don't get done, we'll go Friday too, but I'm hoping we get it all done tomorrow. But that's just a one-time trip for them to kind of learn, and I hand over the keys to them. So there's a lot of stuff out there to learn in one day. and to maintain, keep a system maintained. If you have someone that can maintain it for you, such as the state, it's a good direction to go.
And that's, you know, that one of the conversations we had in a meeting with the city regarding communications last week. The end of last week was regarding what's going to happen when there's a communication deficit, if you will, out there. Right now the process will be they'll call the communication center and Lieutenant Oliver will spearhead who to contact. Obviously, if there's anything on our end that's an equipment or a cost, we will incur that cost, but he will be the contact in the turnover here from Mark leaving to doing something different. So we do have somebody to troubleshoot that, and the city's stepped up to do that. So we'll have a contact. So we'll come back in 2 weeks for action. This is probably number one on our homework list. So spend some time. Call any of these gentlemen up here if you've got any questions. Let's be prepared to make some sort of decision to have some more lively discussion in 2 weeks. Yes, sir.
One other question. What if Wymore says we don't have the money, we can't do it? What happens then?
They've already said that.
I mean, what? How does that? How do we continue with them then?
I don't know. Okay. I guess my point to that would be, they contract with the police department or, you know, with the city to do that, but yet somewhere along the line, there's going to have to be something worked out with that. Now, if I may recommend something, if we go ahead and put them on the counties and they pay a portion of the money back to the county, if they don't have the money right now to do that. I don't know if that's something you would all want to do, but once that system's off, they're going to be, you know, when the voting system goes down in Wymore right now, and we haven't had a problem lately since we moved it to the highway shop where it's maintained and climate controlled now, but they have, if they're in their police department, they have no communications now, even with the voter. So when they step outside with the voter, they still don't have it. So it's very important that you keep, you know, Wymore included in this. And tonight I'm just going to say the council needs to probably approach Chairman Bauman and where they want to go from there. And they're kind of in the same boat. They're losing their chief tonight, so they don't know. And that's why I'm going to take the time and go down and explain it to them tonight. So.
Okay. Thank you all for your time. Thank you for coming down. Thank you for the information.
Forward here. Road.
I think he needs a point of privilege.
Myron needs a point of privilege. 11-11.
Thank you.
All right, we'll reconvene. 11-18. Road and Bridge. Gary?
Yeah, I'm good. I just always have to scoot back.
I got glasses out. Matt, Road and Bridge. Probably one of the shortest sessions we've had.
And you were there.
A lot of these things we have covered or will cover yet in the meeting. Special use permit, we've done that already. Received a letter from the state federal funds purchase program that our STP fund payment from them will be $144,632.09. And the bridge fund would be $111,127.85. Those funds are what's sent back to us through the state through this new program. So that's where that's coming from. Township meeting, discussed that briefly. I think that went well. Normally it's a... numerous complaints, but I think everybody was there. It went fairly smooth. I don't think there was a lot of big issues that came up, so I think that's all right for now. Armor coating, we're going to come to that. A lot of these issues we're coming to yet, Matt, so I'll just stop right there.
Okay, any questions for Terry? Anybody on Road and Bridge? All right, we'll move forward then. Have a motion to approve or disapprove armor coating project C-34, 1052, 1053, and 1054. This is a change order and supplement agreement between Gage County, Nebraska, and Top Coat, Inc. to compensate the contractor for 28.5 additional armor coat miles and having a chairman sign agreement. Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
I make a motion to approve.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Hill. Discussion. Terry.
Matt, these are those miles that we've talked about for the last month now that the armor coating company were, as stated, they were willing to do at the same cost that they did the previous miles that we had in the budget. There's an additional 28 and a half miles. I think I went through them last time. Is anybody any questions which miles they were? I can do it again. Should I go over it?
Yeah, go over it again.
All right. The and approximate cost on this is about $12,000 a mile. We've got Cortland East for 5 miles, Pickerel West 3 miles, Hoyg Road for 2 miles, Sumner Street 2.8 miles, Beeline East and north of Honesville Road for 2 miles, Grain Bend Road for 2 miles. That was the original one. Now, added to it, 6 miles Christchurch Road, Pickerel East for 10.5 miles, and Odell North for 12 miles. Those are the additional miles that we're approving today, the 28.5 miles.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further questions for Supervisor Juergens?
Just for confirmation, the dollars for this was coming from extra dollars, or well, not extra dollars, but
part of that, Myron, correct me if I'm wrong, the bid came in lower, so we could do an additional 6 miles on what we had budgeted for work being done. So we added an additional 6 miles, which is at Christchurch Road. The additional Pickerel East and Odell North was money that we took out of our road bond fund to use, that we had additional monies left in there. So that's where those additional, I guess, 22.5 miles came from. That's where the money come from.
And that was because the prices came in better than we figured, so we were able to do more stuff
exactly.
with the road bond money that we had.
Yep.
Okay.
More discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. Approve or disapprove agreement for a consultant inspection and load re-rating on county fractured critical bridges and having the chairman sign the agreement. And this is a state program, correct? And there's also, you'll see there's another resolution that follows that because the state has their own resolution. So,
Matt, I make a motion to approve.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Second by Lytle. Yes, sir.
Matt, discussion. Could I have Galen come up and address this? He's much... What this is?
On this agreement is for bridge inspections on fracture critical bridges. The state will be doing them. This go around, we just have the one bridge, one truss bridge. The estimated cost, total cost is $3,000. The county will be using their SoftMudge credit to do this. Our share is 20% of $3,000 to do this, so approximately $600 is their estimate. And that's what this first agreement is.
Galen, and explain to them what a fracture critical bridge is.
Fracture critical bridge is a truss bridge, or also there's a two beam bridge. The two outside main beams actually support the whole structure, and you have a series of little cross beams underneath of it. So if one of your main supporting structures is hit, like the outside of a truss, the whole structure can go down, or the same with a two-beam system. If the outside beam's hit, the whole structure could drop in the creek. So that's a fracture critical structures.
Questions? I have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, I'll take a vote. 7-0 to approve. Next is approve or disapprove resolution on the signing of a program agreement for 2014 fracture critical bridge inspections.
Make a motion to approve.
14-07.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Thank you, Galen. All right. Did I miss anything in the kind of bounced around? Give me just a moment. Next, I need a motion to approve or disapprove accepting the resignation of Mark Mines, Emergency Manager, effective April 20th, 2014. Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
April 2nd.
Second.
What did I say?
20th. He just worked him 18 more days.
Yeah. April 2nd.
You will be here for the next meeting.
Sorry. Need a motion to approve or disapprove accepting his resignation.
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Dorn. Discussion. I will say that his last full-time day on the job will be the 13th. And then there are some additional paperwork and things he needs to get done with EMPG monies and grant dollars and quarterly reports. So his official last day is April 2nd, but he will not be here in a full-time capacity. There will be some times that he'll come in and mostly be using vacation that he's accrued that we would have paid anyway. And then the hours that he's here, he will pull off of that. So his last day will be officially full-time would be the 13th, and his last official day as a county employee would be the 2nd.
Now, if we vote this down, then he's got to stay, right? You don't have a choice.
That was my question. What happens if this don't pass? That made up my mind. Yeah.
Everything's negotiable.
Yeah, everything's negotiable.
So I got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Again, you know, Mark, I'll just say appreciate your service. You know, I hope you enjoy the flowers. Yep. Thought we'd do something a little bit different for you. And now Gus is.
My wife and daughter
bought her flowers.
Watch out for turn the radio off before you give them to her.
You want to leave one downstairs, Mark.
Yeah. 13. That's good. So, anyway, I think we all appreciate the work. We see that, you know, the type of projects after our hour and a half, almost 2 hour conversation about communications, the type of stuff that Mark was dealing with and countywide and the complexity that sometimes comes along with that. So with that being said, if no one else has any words of encouragement or discouragement, yes, sir.
I did send you, did you get the copy of the list of stuff that I'll be completing?
I haven't seen it yet. I'll double check.
Okay. I emailed it to you.
Okay, I'll have to double check.
I'll get a copy. That's stuff that I'll complete over the next.
So we'll still be in communication with Mark as it exits out. So, sure. We'll have a motion in a second. There's no further discussion. I will call for a vote to accept a resignation, 7-0. Next is to approve or disapprove accepting the resignation of Mark Jobman as Emergency Management Deputy Director, effective March 12th. I also received that information. So I need a motion to approve or disapprove.
So moved.
Moved by Dennis Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. He didn't get flowers.
I might add, Mark's been here the last 15 years with me. In his new position at the hospital, he just didn't really have the time to fill anything else.
Here again, I think it's a instance where we're going to lose a resource that's very very capable of a lot of things, and it's going to be a loss. But, you know, I understand where Mark's position's at and the fact that he's a busy fella. So.
Vote. 7-0. Next is to approve or disapprove immediate advertising, posting, job listing for emergency management director position for Gage County.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Hill. Discussion. I told Mark this is going to be a little bit weird. He's going to see his job posted as he's still working here. But we, you know what, don't want to be hasty about it, but we also need to move forward. The longer you wait, then that's just how much further you're behind. And this is a position that we need to fill sooner than later, so we'll start that process.
Yep. How long are you going to advertise for, or give us a timeline or any
typically
idea?
We would, I think we'll do, well, I guess I need a motion for that. Well, we can list it. That's maybe we'll go.
Typically, you'd run till higher.
Yeah. You just want to run till higher. At some point, we'll just.
But you ought to have a preference date. That you'll run till you hire, but if we leave it open for 6 months, I mean.
Yeah.
Well, let's. You know what I mean? Yeah, we have a preference day of April. I don't know, whatever.
Let's do.
So they
know how you'd pick a date.
By the end of business on March 21st, we'll see what applications
care.
We have.
We don't need this.
Because you can always run.
We could always, you know, we're not getting the candidates or no one applied. Let's keep running it. We can, and we'll have a meeting during that time frame on the 19th. So if it looks like, you know, if we've got 4 or 5, then we'll know that the applications will stop. We'll cease coming in on the 21st. Is that?
I'm a believer in running them longer, but that's okay.
No,
that would be fine.
Description written up because it's going to take us a little bit.
Only giving you 2 weeks to
get. You really ought to do that.
We'll get one.
Do we run for 30 days?
Don't you have a job description?
We'll get one through. I talked to Mark about that. Nima's got one that's.
I mean, you may have to tweak it.
Right, yeah. But I mean, as far as for an ad.
Yeah, we'll get that together.
I, I do agree with Denny to a certain degree that that is a pretty short period of time in order to capture candidates for this position. I know we're in a hurry here, but I think we should maybe look at opening that up, that time period, maybe a little bit longer to try and capture as many candidates as possible.
It'll give you probably less than a week where you actually are exposed to anybody.
Right. Yeah. You want the 28th of March?
By the time anyone would contact us to make a decision on making application, you're...
We can go until higher. Let's just go. We'll just do it.
No, you don't want to do that. You don't want to go to higher because then somebody might not get their application in that you really want in. So you need to have a preference date so that they get them in.
Maybe add 2 weeks.
Yeah, add 2 weeks.
Take April a day 4th. And add it to the motion.
April 4th.
April 4th.
Okay.
Closing date of April 4.
Yep.
All right.
I accept that for my motion. And John was the second.
Yep.
Got that? Mm-hmm. Okay, vote. 7-0 to approve. Next, it was on there was approve or disapprove appointing interim emergency management director, and we're not, and nor do we necessarily need to do that. I did speak with the chairman of Jefferson County, and through 3 and 33, a mutual aid agreement. I know Mark's covered for other counties and specifically Jefferson County quite a little bit. I spoke with their emergency management director after speaking with their chairman and had a really good conversation with John McKee over there, and he is obviously more than willing to help us out in what we need here in the interim. We don't really need to appoint somebody, if you will, because through mutual aid will cover that. So I do have contact information with him. Gus, do you have that contact information?
I do not have John.
I've got all that, so I will share that with you and the clerk. And Mark, if you've got that information, I'll get to the rest of the board, too, so everyone will have a copy of that information. Did speak with Joe Hawkins, too, about... You know, how his expectations would be the same, but we need to have some sort of point of contact, and we can talk about that later when we go and talk about personnel, how that'll work. So Joe Hawkins is going to stay on, and typically he's working about 16 hours a week, so he has no desire to step up and be that. I get it. I understand that. So, but he will be some point of contact for us here locally at least, but we do have coverage through mutual aid agreements with Jefferson County. Part of that, as we move forward then, and would be the next thing, would be discussion on forming an interview committee. And I know there's an email I'd sent to Dawn, asked her to bounce it out. Kind of the folks who I thought would be Kathy from HR, Gary from Law Enforcement Emergency Management, and John Hill to be our interview committee. Didn't tell you that, John, did I?
I nominated Myron in my place.
So, well, we need to talk about how that committee is going to get together.
But, good shot, John. Good job.
But also, I did speak with Jim Decker. He is the vice president or vice chair, if you will, of the 3 and 33 group, and he is from Wymore. And I thought with the communication that takes place there, and he said he'd be willing to help. And then also Brian Dakey from the city. And also, I talked to the mayor about that, about Brian, and he says he's fine with that, and I spoke with Brian. And obviously those two gentlemen that aren't in an official capacity for the county wouldn't have any authority to make the decision, but they said they would help us to ask the question or filter the information that comes in. And I talked to Jim Engel from Beatrice Rural Fire, and I also spoke to Mark, and I think that Mark would agree to, you know, just to have someone there to ask those questions that, you know, we may not know to ask. And to go through that and maybe, you know, it's a pretty tight community, but having that understanding, that perspective might be valuable. But obviously the decision rests with us, but it'd be good to have a reference. So I, you know, no action today, but those are some of the kind of the people I was thinking about putting on that interview committee. So come back in a couple of weeks as we start to see the applications come in. We'll just have those applications come to the clerk's office, and I'll probably address those initially just to Emergency Management Law Enforcement Committee, where they would, to Gary Lytle, be point of contact. And as he gets those, then we get that committee together, we can filter them through the committee. And then Myron's got one here. Let's discuss this voting on Engage.
Monday, March 10th, is our annual meeting at 4 o'clock. And at the annual meeting this year, the only thing that will be up for a vote is we have three positions that are up for election, two from the so-called county, one from the city. And Since I'm a representative on the count, on the N-Gage, Ellen Angdale and I, Ellen from the city, I from, and then two other people, were the nominating committee. So the four of us were the nominating committee. We do have the six names, or we do have individuals for all of these. The city did at their meeting Monday night, for their conversation, did appoint the mayor to do the voting. Part of our discussion, Ellen and I's discussion, is since I was on the nominating committee, do you still want me to go ahead and be the person to vote? And I'd be fine with it, but also at the same time, I thought it would also be good if somebody, Matt or whoever else, if somebody else wanted to be that person to vote, that'd be fine too.
So, I would move that Myron is our person to vote. He has been active and engaged. He understands the process as far as hiring and all the interviewing, and I would definitely move that we nominate Myron Dorn to be our representative to vote at the N-Gage annual meeting.
Moved by Byers.
I'd second that.
Seconded by Hill. Discussion, any conflict of interest? Just
yeah,
running through
that. Would be,
any,
no, okay. No, he's not. He serves on the committee. He's an official member, so
okay.
No conflict.
Quick vote. 7-0. You voted for yourself, Myron.
I did not abstain.
That was very bright. You made a good decision.
I didn't want to argue with the rest of you.
He didn't offer a better person. Go ahead.
I might not have seconded that if you
join
that
agreement. No one led from the public to speak. Anybody from the media have anything to say? Any bad or indifferent?
No.
See, now they have their stuff shut off, so they don't.
You know, they like Thursday night because they got cookies and coffee.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you got the sarcasm here. Okay.
Where'd all the leftover cookies go? Still sitting out there.
Paul Hayes,
no, I need to bring them over here.
Paul Hayes got them,
yeah. Okay, no.
They cross off?
Yeah, the different things that the insurance company sent in those individual packages. Bring them over here, yeah. Okay.
Last thing, I need a motion to go into closed session to discuss personnel necessary for the protection of the public interest, and specific to this one, for the protection or needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved.
Moved by Setzer.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Vote 7-0.
All right, Terry.
Doug is
asleep. All right, we're going live here. 12:33, I need a motion to come out of closed session. Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Setzer. Vote 7-0. We're out of closed session. Anything else for the board? Nope. We're adjourned. 12:33.